Hello, everybody. Welcome to Optional Opinion here on Anomalous Radio Network. I'm your host, Eddie V. Thank you guys for joining me. I hope everyone is having a good week. This is the second week of the video, Beauty of Video Games project that I am doing. Last week I did Microsoft, and this week I'm focusing on Sony. I have a great special guest on the podcast today. I met him through the MVC book club that I keep mentioning. You guys need to join it if you're on Facebook. Come play Nintendo games with us and join us in the discussion. But this guy, he has an awesome podcast. He's just amazing. He's like another version of me, but far away. He is one half of the Happy Hour podcast with Johnny and Deuce. Everybody, please give a warm welcome to Johnny Rawmack.
Hello, hello. Glad to be here.
Thank you for joining me. Today's topic, of course, is talking about the beauty of Sony, on why we love Sony, why sometimes we hate Sony, and some of the greatest games that they produce. This week, if you've been reading the blogs and everything, we're just going to expound more on it. And our 30 game list is going to be actually different from the blog that you just read. So we're going to get right into it. But before we do that, Johnny, can you give us some background on your gaming history?
Yeah, well, real quick, 1986, I got my first NES for Christmas that year. And that was like my first real diving into gaming. My uncle had an Atari 2600, so I kind of played Pitfall and all those games as well. But it wasn't until 86 when I got my own first console. And I fell in love. Mario's first jump, jumping on the Goomba, being scared, not knowing what it is, going down the pipe, like getting all excited, you know, and not knowing what's going to happen, and the mystery of the unknown. And I think I've owned every console ever made except for the Dreamcast. So
I love video games. Neo Geo. There's no way you had $600 to buy a Neo Geo and the 3DO and the Atari Jaguar.
Okay, so yeah, there's a few on this thing. So I've owned all the main consoles, if you will.
The main companies.
The main companies.
And that's awesome. I know we have a great love for the Super Nintendo as we talk about Secret of Mana a lot, talking about role-playing games a lot. But we're going to do our best to focus more on Sony. The Nintendo podcast will be that next week. Cannot wait for you guys to hear that with my special guest. That one is going to be kind of long, but it's going to be very interesting. But we're going to get into the first part of what makes Sony beautiful. I know definitely for me, Sony makes some of the best audio and technology when it comes to photography, for music. If people don't know that, Columbia Records is part of Sony. And they started in, I think, 1946. That's where Sony started. And for them to be, like, they're, like, 69 years old right now, compared to Microsoft being, like, about, I think, like, Microsoft is, like, maybe 40-something years old, and Sony's, like, 69, and Nintendo's just, like, 100 and 1,000.
125, I think.
Yeah. So their headphones, definitely for me, I love their headphones. I would spend good money for their headphones. Their Sony Walkman. I used to have the red one. And if people don't remember, this was just way throwback before MP3s and stuff like that. But the best Walkman that you could get was Sony Walkman. And I believe if you guys listen to Good Job Brain, their podcast with Karen Chu, Chris Kohler, and they actually give out facts about the first Walkman. They talk about the story, how Sony ended up making the Walkman and things like that. It's very interesting. So if you guys could check it out on their website, gooddrivebrain.com. But Johnny, what was your first thing with Sony?
You talk about audio, and it was really funny because I come across as a Sony fanboy. Let me preface my comments because I own a lot of Sony products. I don't know if it was just I just loved them so far back, or it was just kind of saw Sony everywhere, right? I think Sony did a great job of marketing here in the West. Yes. Like, you just saw Sony selling televisions. You know, the Vios obviously didn't work so well. We'll talk about that later. But the headphones, like, I remember my dad buying me, like, a Sony Walkman. I mean, and they had these big, big old headphones, like, just, you know, right here. And, like, it was just, I would just sit for hours listening to music. And you had to have the batteries. Like, you didn't have an AC adapter. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you had, like, didn't have any more batteries. And then my dad was ended up buying rechargeable batteries. And those were even more expensive, you know, but you could charge them and stuff. But, like, I own a Sony television. I own a Sony sound system now. Like, I own Sony headphones. I just own so many Sony products that I think you hit the nail on the head, though, with the audio. Like, their audio is second to none. Like, they're superior when it comes to audio quality.
I mean, it's one of the best technology. And I'm not a big Sony fan, but I love their products. Anything that has to do with Sony's name on it, I would do that. I got Sony speakers for my computer. I got Sony headphones that I use for the show. I actually just ordered like 2 pairs for my guests, so when I go to their house and podcast, they can hear the great quality of that. Of course, I own a PlayStation 1, 2, and 3, and plan on getting a 4. Like, I own a Walkman. Just everything about Sony when it comes to tech, you spend good money for great quality. Because stuff like Magnavox or even Pioneer or Panasonic, they're okay, but they don't last long compared to what Sony does. You know, there's something about Sony's engineering that's just completely worse. And I was going to get a computer from Sony, but they went out of business and stopped the line. And I was just like, rat.
Yeah, I remember the Sony Vaio. Like, they had the Sony Vaio laptops. And I remember it was all the rave. People were just buying them up. And then I guess all of a sudden, like, Sony just stopped making them or whatever. But yeah, people love the Sony Vaios.
Yeah, definitely for me. What a lot of people really don't realize that before Sony even got into the video game market of making consoles, Sony used to actually make video games for the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis. So what would happen is when Sega CD came out, they did a Peter Pan game for them. And then they also did something for Nintendo. Now, later on in time, before the CDI came out, Sony and Nintendo were going to make an add-on for the Super NES. Plans didn't work out. There was just different business decisions. And a lot of people still talk about that and wonder what would it be right now. And I cannot see it being the Super Nintendo PlayStation. Or the Super Nintendo Station. That just does not sound right. And a lot of systems during that time were doing CD add-ons. Like, if you look at the TurboGrafx 16, they had a CD add-on. Like I said, the Sega Genesis had a CD add-on. Later on, 3DO and the Atari Jaguar came out, but, you know, those was like feature consoles around PlayStation 1. And then, you know, because of that that deal, they evolved to what they are now. Because of the PlayStation 1 that Sony produced, it kind of revolutionized the video game industry, moving past the 16-bit. You know, Sega Genesis, they had the 32X, but it really wasn't 32-bit like they said it was.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think Sony revolutionized, like, I say a lot of adjectives about Sony, especially with their PlayStation. Like, they revolutionized the industry. They said, we don't need Nintendo. And that was a bold statement to make, because they were like, Nintendo has just been the top dog for years. And they're like, all right, we have enough confidence, enough moxie to go out and do it ourselves, because we make great products. We believe in our products. We believe in our engineers. We believe in everything we do. And they went out and made an amazing console that I still own and I still play today, the first PlayStation console. And they revolutionized the dual analog sticks. I mean, awesome. DualShock.
But wasn't that after Nintendo did their... The N64 did their analog stick. The DualShock came after the N64.
Yeah, I know, but but Sony was the first one to put a dual analog stick.
Oh, the double analog. Okay.
Yeah, and that really changed the face, because I don't know if you've played your 64 in a while, but when you try to go back and play like Turok or Perfect Dark, you have to control with the C buttons, and it's just, it's almost unplayable now because you're so used to the dual analog sticks.
Well, during that time, definitely for shooters, that was a big thing on PC. It wasn't big on consoles just yet. Even though GoldenEye 64 was fun, I will admit that. And the world ends with you. I remember, and I'm not trying to make this a Nintendo podcast, but I remember me and my friends, we was at his house and we played The World Is Not Enough until 5 o'clock that morning, and we had to be at work like at 7. So we all went home, got to work, was just like, I want one more match against you, and we'll get off of work. But this is Sony's podcast. Moving on from that, Sony actually made history with the PlayStation 1. It was definitely big when they announced that Squaresoft, before it became Square Enix, they announced Final Fantasy VII for the PlayStation. Now, it usually was going to come out for the N64, and it was going to be on their DD drive, but plans didn't work, and Sony and Nintendo lost that relationship. And to have a stab in the heart, they announced Final Fantasy VII, and still to this day, it's one of the biggest franchises for that system.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, I think from that point on, they set a staple, like they set a precedence. They're like, when you want great RPGs, you want to come to the PlayStation. And when you had the 64, you maybe had like 5 RPGs you can count on your hand, one hand. You know, you had Ogre Battle 64, you had Quest 64, and then there's like 3 others that don't really matter. But like, you didn't go to your 64 to get, you know, RPGs. You were still playing your SNES to play, right, you know, RPGs. And then Sony just pretty much said, hey, we got, you know, I don't know if we're going to talk about the CD disc itself, but that's revolutionary amount of storage space you can put on a CD-ROM.
Yeah, we could talk about that. Because of the PlayStation 1 being a vast video game systems, and actually setting the standards of two on what systems are now, because CDs were easy to produce and still really cheap to produce, they were able to add a lot of, you know, CGI effects. The music was more clearer than the 16 and 32-bit. So you didn't get that muffled sound like something from the Sega Genesis or things like that. You got this top quality, like you actually listening to a CD in your car. It was able to hold enough data, more than a cartridge did. So if you want to do a cutscene, on a cartridge, you had to compress it, and that became a problem, where you didn't really have to do that much on the PlayStation. Now, for example, if you look at Resident Evil 64 compared to Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 2 on Nintendo 64 to Resident Evil 2 on the PlayStation 1, you will see the difference of it in quality, where the N64 is kind of muddy. And you don't really get that sound, that quality sound. But on PlayStation 2, you do get that sound.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because not a lot of people really talk about it. But, you know, we'll talk about it later. But Sony also is very smart with the use of the CD-ROM when it comes to music. Because think about it, in that mid-90s era is when there was that paradigm shift from cassettes to the Discman, so to speak. Like when they were switching over into the disc-based products. So, like, you can play, like, for example, I've used this example before. Like, if you turn on your PlayStation 1 without putting a game in and then go to the menu, you can actually place your video game into the CD area, CD player, and you can play music from the game itself. Right. Like, it's a soundtrack. Most people don't know that. It's pretty awesome, actually. And try it out.
And you could also, this was the way, that you could play international games, where you would load the PlayStation 1 US, it would load first and stop. You could take it out, and depending on if you had a pen that holded it, a button that held the CD down, you could switch to the international thing, start the menu, and it would load up. So it kind of tricked the system in playing some, and I'll admit, I think I only played one, some kind of fighter that was straight garbage. But it was cool to see that being done. So you didn't really have to mod your system.
Well, for me, the reason why I did it was because I'm a huge Dragon Ball Z fan, even to this day. And a lot of the games, they didn't come over like as fast as they do now. So with like, especially with localization. So it was like, I was like, my friend's like, hey, have you tried out the new Dragon Ball Z game? It won't be over here for 2 years. I'm like, well, give it to me. So and that's kind of the main reason why I, you know, did that. So,
you know what? A lot of people did. A lot of people did that when Final Fantasy VII came out. Just like if Japan got a game and you was a big importer, that was the way for you to play your game. Moving on with that, years later, the PlayStation 2 came out. And this is me, and at that time, Xbox wasn't out yet, and GameCube wasn't out just yet. But the PlayStation 2, it became one of the hardest systems to find until the Wii came out, actually. The PlayStation 2, even though it didn't have a really good launch, it was kind of interesting to see that they integrated the DVD functionality, because DVDs were just started to get big, but the players really cost much. And then to have, I believe it was $300 when it came out for the PlayStation 2, you had not only a game system, but you had a DVD player.
Yeah, I think the DVD player was a huge deal, because once again, Sony was smart. And I've said this before, but it's almost like they had a Nostradamus in their company, because they're like, all right, you're gonna have your cassettes going to CD-ROM, so we perfected that with the first PlayStation. What's this? DVD is really becoming popular. What is the most affordable way you can buy a DVD player and still be able to have games and stuff? They were able to do that as well. So like I bought mine for a DVD player. That was one that, I mean, I love. I was still playing my PS1, uh-huh. And I was like, all right, I need an expensive DVD player and play games. So I was like, all right, I'm future proof.
Yeah, and see, I didn't hop onto the PlayStation 2, I think, until the Slim came out, because people were, and we'll talk about this in the next segment. There were kind of like still some problems with it, but I just was so committed to Nintendo. I definitely was just like, you know, The Legend of Zelda, I got Mario, I got Donkey Kong 64, I'm playing Resident Evil 64. I was still committed, but then when the Slim came out, I was just like, okay, now I can start picking up some good games for that library. And you were still able to play your PlayStation 1 on the Slim. I don't know on the original system if you was able to play it, because on the PlayStation 2, when you got the first version of it, the tray slid out. And then when you got the PlayStation 2 Slim, you was able to hit the button and it would pop up open. I already had a DVD player, and because I was watching, and this is how nerdy I am. When I brought my DVD player, Transformers the movie was the first DVD I brought.
Nice.
and I got hooked onto DVDs, and then realizing that, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot it. The system played DVDs, so I just started using my PS2 for DVDs.
Yeah, and was it the PS2 or the PS3 that you had a remote that came with it?
PS2. PS2 started with the remote, and you got to buy that separately. We didn't have HD just yet, so we didn't have the cords and the things of that nature. Later on, you know, I think, what, 7 years? About 5 or 7 years, the PlayStation 2 was strong. It produced a lot of great games. It was kind of the leading system in the house before Xbox came along. And then that's when Sony started having competition. And then the GameCube came along. And when we get into the Nintendo, when I get into the Nintendo podcast, I'll speak more about GameCube. But, like, the PlayStation 2 was still strong. It was still the leading platform to get great games.
155 million units it sold to date. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, and even when PlayStation 3 came out, it was still making games for PlayStation 2. So that tells you how long that system has been around. Once again, PlayStation 2, definitely for me, was the leading platform for role-playing games. Like, I love Sony's first party, and I did respect the third party, but because I also had an Xbox, I would kind of switch to see which one would be better and which would be cheaper. With the PlayStation 2, man, I just had a blast of role-playing games. Like, and don't want to get into the 30 game list, but Rogue Galaxy and Final Fantasy 12, man, those was kind of my top RPGs for that system.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into the games later, because we definitely have a conversation about, especially PS2.
Yes. And the last part about this, PlayStation 3 introduced Blu-ray and the cell chip. And I remember the cell chip, just reading about it in Electronic Gaming Monthly, how powerful it was. It was from IBM. And at that time, IBM was actually doing business with I think all, I think they was doing business with Nintendo also. Microsoft had their own chip, so they didn't use IBM. For any of their chips, but you know, they made Sony's cell, the cell processor, cell chip. And I remember reading in a story about the PlayStation 3 that, you know, if it became so popular, you could put the cell chip like in a toaster and it would cook toast like that. Like it was so powerful from what I read, but it became a hassle to a lot of developers.
Yeah, well, it was hard to develop for it because I don't know at what point it happened, but developers were making games for the 360 first, and then you get like a dumbed-down port to the PS3 that was usually not as good. And that was a major problem. I think developers had an issue developing for the PS3.
And I could actually say that it for me, when it came to the PlayStation 3, it came to a price drop. And then it just be like, okay, now that, you know, it's at a reasonable price. Definitely, if you look at when it first came out, it only had 20 gigabytes of hard drive space. And then you could buy that order. I think a 40 gig was the more expensive one. And just later on in time, they just added more gigabytes. The design of the PlayStation 3, everybody kept calling it a George Foreman grill. I don't know why. I just found that so funny. So, I got the PlayStation 3 Slim when they kind of like redid it. And then, you know, when they put in 320 gig, that's when I was just like, okay, I'm good to go.
Are we going to talk about backwards compatibility?
Oh, yeah. First, with PlayStation 2, you know, all you had to do was do the disc for backwards compatibility. With PlayStation 3, at first, they did have it, but then they put an update where it erased that functionality. I really don't know. Johnny, did you get a PlayStation 3 when it first came out, or did you get one like later on?
I was actually late to the party when it came to the PS3. I didn't get mine. Because the PS3 came out in 2006, so I didn't get mine till like 2008, middle of 2008, so it was like the 80 gig model, but it wasn't the Metal Gear Solid one. I think that, if correct me if I'm wrong, but the Metal Gear Solid edition was the last 80 gig model that was backwards compatible, I think, if memory serves.
Yeah, but because they released, if you didn't update it, you still had the functionality. But if you did update the system or it automatically updated itself, it just removed it completely for all the systems.
Why do you think that they did that?
Because I kind of think that, you know, at first they said that it was too much money. So they said when they stopped putting it in, that brought the cost down for the system. But I think personally, you know, Sony was just not big on backwards the backwards compatibility. I can't say the word. Play old games. Playing their old games on their system. I think they were just like, you know, we don't need this function because it's taking up too much. And we want people to buy the new $60 games and not the $40 or $30 games playing it on our new system.
Well, I think with, because you're right, and a lot of people have said this too, and I've researched it. But for the first few years, Sony was selling the PS3 at a loss. Like they were actually losing money on the system each time they sold it. So they had to find a way to quit hemorrhaging money, and they had to find a way to reduce the cost. And I don't know if that was when they started making money, when they cut that out, or when they went to the slim version, the smaller version, because obviously it's less specs, you know, less hardware.
I think when they actually got to the slim, because that's when it started picking up, they didn't actually get into the black, I think, until almost 2010 to 2011. It took a long time for them to get into the black. And I definitely know on the EGM, they had on the cover of the original PlayStation with a tomato thrown on it as the cover. And there was Jake something, I forgot his name. He was the president at that time of Sony.
Jack Trenton.
And EGM did an interview about, you know, why is your system not selling? And he was just like, giving some kind of excuse to say, you know, at this time you can't find the PlayStation 3 in stores. And I think they ended up showing him a picture of Best Buy of all three of the PlayStation 3 all stacked up. So they were just like, okay, so if you can't find it in the store, how come I just went to a Best Buy before this interview, took a picture, and showed that you know your sisters is not selling?
Well, I think one thing that the 360 had going for it was they had a great user interface. They had, once they switched the blades and they had the actual user interface, Xbox Live was just mind-blowingly good, the way it was used, the way its interface was. And I think everyone was like, all right, well, I'm going to go to a better server, a better system, and I'm going to go and play my games there with my friends. And obviously, we know how huge Call of Duty was for the 360. Right. And that just brought people over there. And, like, why would you go to the PS3 when, you know, the online wasn't very good and the XMB, people didn't care about that. It wasn't very user-friendly at first, the PS3.
Yeah. And we're going to get into the hardships of hardware portion of the show. And I kind of talked about this also on the Microsoft thing. Now, even though the 360 was a huge seller, big system, introduction to the HD graphics, it had its problems. And definitely one of the problems was the Red Ring of Death. Sony systems were very reliable. The problem with it, though, was if you go back to the PlayStation 1 and early PlayStation 2s, for some people, you had to turn your system over upside down because the lens wouldn't read. Now, people who spent $300, because I got it actually for my birthday, like in 1996, maybe a month and a half after I had it, the system wasn't loaded, so I had to turn mine over. And even when PS1, which was the like smaller version of the PlayStation, I still had to turn it over, and that became a really big thing, because if you're turning over your system, will sometimes scratch your whole system, will scratch your CD.
Yeah, I had a friend that had that happen too. He was playing, what was he playing? I remember what game he was playing, some RPG. I think it was like Final Fantasy something, and Final Fantasy 9. He was playing Final Fantasy 9, and he had to turn it over, and then when he went to switch to the second disc, because, you know, there's multiple discs in those games, he just saw this huge scratch on his first disc, and he was heartbroken.
And the bad thing about it was that Sony's games for the PlayStation 1, the bottom part was black, so you could see the scratches. On PlayStation 2, the CDs were blue, like a dark blue. You could see the scratches. That was just like, why is the system doing this to my games? With PlayStation 3, it was the price alone. It was a reliable system. It was good. You had the Blu-ray player, but the price was ridiculous. $600 for the PlayStation 3 when it came out. I think it was like $500 for the 20 gig, $600 for the 40 gig. We didn't have that price point since the Neo Geo came out. And that was in 1994 when the Super Nintendo was out. No, I know. Actually, I think 92 or 93.
Yep.
You know, even the 3 Duo was expensive. But the $600 console was actually just like the Neo Geo. Who would go to E3 and mention you need to get two jobs if you want to buy our system? That was infuriating to a lot of the Sony's fan base. So a lot of people just once again went to 360 just be like, you know, I'm going to go to the system because A, it's cheaper, and you know, once they experience life and everything, bam, it was a big thing.
Well, that was me. Like, I actually got my 360 before I got my PS3. I got my 360 back in, like, 2007, I think. And so, you know, 2 years late as well to that party, but like I got it and I enjoyed it, loved it. And then once the PS3 started rolling out some really nice, you know, exclusives, then I started to make the jump over as well. But my 360 Red Ring too, by the way. So that's another story altogether. But real quick, PS2, I had actually had an issue with my PS2. It was loading games, but the controller would not work on my system. Like I bought 4 or 5 different controllers, mm-hmm. and it would not detect my controller. I had to get it swapped out and refurbished for a slim version. Wow. But the bigger version, uh-huh. it wouldn't read any controllers.
Wow. My PlayStation 2 didn't have any problems, and I still haven't had no problems with PlayStation 3. Only thing I have a problem with the PlayStation 3 was the CD ejecting. Like, sometimes the CD wouldn't eject, and I'm like, uh-oh, what the heck is going on here? But you could go online and figure it out, so it wasn't that bad. But I was just like, I can't get the game out of my system. This is going to be crazy. To me, definitely, between the 360 and between the PlayStation 3, having problems with the systems, I think Microsoft had it worse than Sony.
Yep.
Sony had a problem with the price and trying to make face and trying to just, you know, we need to do better and come out. That's fine. I argue on the last podcast about Microsoft. It's just like, it took 4 systems for them to get it right. And the Slim still sometimes Red Ring. And then I think it's now stable. They got it correct. And they learned from that problem to make the Xbox One. Because of the same mistake that Sony did at E3, Microsoft did that for Xbox One. And now the ties have turned with PlayStation 4. Problem now with PlayStation 4 is that you have more HD remakes. And this is even for Xbox One. You have more HD remakes than you have actual games, like new games, wanting games for PlayStation 4. And now it's to the point where everybody has the system. Good that they got the sales. I still feel like no one is coming in and buying games for those systems. And I don't know what is it. What the problem is that people were so hyped that you could do all this amazing stuff with the PlayStation 4 and it's the best seller, but the game purchases are not matching up.
Well, I actually think it was smart for Sony. I love them or hate them, you know, most people either love or hate collections, but I think it was really smart for Sony because of a lot of the last generation went to 360 and missed a lot of the big key games, you know, like Tomb Raider, people played that. But, you know, like The Last of Us, for example, is a huge deal. Like, a lot of people miss those games. And so, like, the Uncharted Collection, like, people miss those games. So there's a lot of, you know, I like some of the ideas they're having. But I do agree with the fact that, you know, I have a PS4. I bought it at launch. I love it. It works, whatever. I'm actually playing more of the indie titles on there than I am any of the AAA titles.
And I think, actually, that's become the thing, even for Wii U, for Xbox One, Wii U, 360, and even, not 360, PS4, and even PC, indie is like the new first party.
Yeah, like, I agree.
You know, well, besides Nintendo, but.
Yeah.
Once again, listen to that next week. but I'm still trying to figure out why, you know, and a lot of companies be like, well, it's sold better on PlayStation 4. I'm like, that's fine, but I'm just like, it's the same thing that that these two companies don't have that Nintendo has. And, you know, sorry to make a side note about this. There's something about Nintendo games that you could potentially talk throughout the whole year. Where Sony and Microsoft, and this is what has to deal with the hardships of their hardware, is that they could do all these amazing graphics and stuff, but and even with Twitch and stuff being a big thing on Xbox One and PlayStation 4, you know, it's good that you could share and do all of this stuff, but it's just like, no one is talking about your games after the release. Even with the DLC. Like, if you look at Destiny for PlayStation 4, yes, they had the year one DLC content, but even that content was lackluster, and the game was lackluster. Like, nobody was, like, the reviews for it didn't match. So it kind of got you wondering, just be like, I know it's not Sony's fault, but is Sony going to, what is Sony going to do? They have this DLC content. Are they going to try to get Activision to just be like, you guys got to produce, you know, the best quality content for us? Or, you know.
Well, I think it's, I agree with you, but I also think Sony has a master plan behind as well. Uh-huh. Like, if we follow Sony's track record, there's a Nostradamus that works for this company, and they know when things are going to hit hard and fast. And they had some flops with the PS3 in the beginning. They right the ship at the end, and they did very well. But I think with PS4, it's like I think a lot of 360 people made the jump to PS4 because it was like, I don't think because of the whole, you know, messed up at E3,
yeah,
people were kind of lost their trust in Microsoft. So. Right.
Yeah, and that's why I find it so weird about for both systems. Just like, why are these games not selling as I expect? Like, I want them to sell. Like, I want Metal Gear Solid 5 to sell tremendous on both systems, and only sold one copy at work.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Sony. You brought up Destiny earlier. I bought Destiny Day One. I actually enjoyed it. But there wasn't enough content after a couple months. I kind of like, why do I come back to this? It wasn't a Sony thing. It was more of like just the game itself was not as what we thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone bought it on a Sony console, and that was smart for Sony. And people, they sold systems because of Destiny.
Right.
Period. So it's like they were smart. And now look what they're doing with Star Wars Battlefront. People are putting their campaign is telling you, PS4 Battlefront, PS4 Battlefront. People are associating the Battlefront game with PS4 first. And so I think it's all about psychology, and I think that's why the PS4 is still on track to outsell the PS2, which we saw the PS2, 155 million units. We're at 26 million units in the U.S. right now for the PS4, which is mind-blowing for console.
And for those who are hearing this, the Tokyo Game Show, and they did an announcement that it was a price drop for $292 for the PlayStation 4. That might boost more sales in Japan. But I think people are still playing 3DS and maybe Wii U because of Splatoon and definitely Monster Hunter. Dragon Quest is still big in Japan, but I think... I think the exclusive deal with Nintendo with Dragon Quest is over with, so that's why they kind of actually went. They're kind of actually sharing games with Sony and with Nintendo, because that was really that's one of that SquareSoft Final Fantasy kind of deals. Just be like, how in the heck did Dragon Quest, that was a big thing on Nintendo, jump to Sony, now jump back to Nintendo, and then started making more money? You know, and it's weird. If you look even at the PlayStation 3 move, because we got to talk about that real quick, that was a failure out the door. And there's a comic on Penny Arcade where they do an E3 conference, and they got Sony talking about the move, and someone said, I'm like, the Nintendo already did that with the Wii. And they were just like, but we got a red ball on ours that has light. And they were just like, it looked like a candy, a Tootsie Roll candy thing. And it's just funny. If you go to Penny Arcade, you can look it up. It's so funny. Even with Apple doing their little Wii thing,
the Apple TV thing, yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like lightning struck, you know, at the right time. Like, it, you know, like, I feel like it was just like the clouds parted and like the stars aligned where the Wii was just selling at the right time. And I don't know, motion control feels a little weird to use. Like, that's the problem I had with Skyward Sword. I enjoyed the story, but the motion controls just killed it for me. I'd rather just have a controller in my hand and just, you know, play normal. And I think what happened was Sony tried to cash in on the success of the Wii, and they were like 2 years late. And you know, another peripheral to buy. And I think that's the problem with Microsoft had with the Kinect. Another peripheral you got to buy. I think people, especially our generation, we grew up with the controller in our hands. We want to be able to tactile functions. Right. And I think with the Move, it was too late.
Do you think Sony could be innovative? Let's see. Do you think Sony could be innovative like Nintendo? Because it seems that Nintendo is very innovative with their products, and I don't think Sony has done anything that Nintendo would try to do better or Microsoft would try to do better. Do you think that even though we talked about their technology and their audio and just being so good at it, do you think that they could be innovative?
Well, I don't think Sony cares, to be honest. I don't think they care about innovating. I think they want to make great games. And I think that the thing that they want is they want to have a great system that plays games. And they realize with the mistake of the Move, they're not going to be going crazy. I mean, obviously, we'll talk about Morpheus later. But, like, I don't think they're really putting all their money in one pot anymore. Like, I think they're like, all right, this is what people are buying our system for. We want to cater to those people. Mm-hmm. Have an addition later, that's fine. But I think Sony, just their exclusives, my personal opinion, I know I'm biased, their first-party exclusive titles destroys anything that Microsoft has ever done, period.
But Nintendo outdoes all their whole franchises, like both Sony and Microsoft. And I would say this, because of Smash, you had that all-star battle game that came out for PlayStation 3. That didn't do well. Let's see. I really want to get into Microsoft, but with Sony, it's just like their first party is good. Like I always say this, Team Eco is their Nintendo. You know, sure. if you look at Eco, Shadow of the Colossus, The Last Guardian, which looks beautiful.
When you say they're Nintendo, what do you mean by that?
Meaning that they make quality games that stand out, that you just literally want, that you go crazy over for. Just be like, I'm going to put my money down for that. And I think Team Eco is the only one that does it. Because of God of War and because of Resistance and stuff like that, they look good, but to me personally, they don't interest me. Like, they try to be like something else, but it just doesn't stick. Like Resistance series is good, but if you want to look at it, Resistance 3 is like the best one out of them.
But also, I agree to a point, but also think, who was buying the 360 back in the day? A lot of it was Call of Duty Madden people. It was the Call of Duty Bra people, right? The casual gamer was buying the 360 because their friends are playing online and their friends are playing online.
Right.
So there's a lot of Gears of War, first-person shooter. I call that the Xbox 360, a.k.a. the first-person shooter machine, because that's what it was mainly known for.
They got the first exclusives than anybody else when it came to shooters. And that's completely fine. And I praise Microsoft for, you know, Halo 2. Their online and their multiplayer in Halo 2 is good. I'll give them that. But I think we got to a point that they oversaturated the shooting game, the shooting genre on both systems. And so when Sony tried to do Killzone, tried to do Resistance, it's just, for some people, it fell flat. They're good games, don't get me wrong. I actually beat Killzone 3 in a day and 6 hours. Like, I started at 7 o'clock that Saturday, went to work, came back, finished the game at, like, 2 o'clock that Sunday morning.
Well, I think, for me, it's like, there's always that debate on length of games and all that, but we'll get into that later. But, like, I feel like you could be totally the opposite of what I'm about to say, but, like, I feel like, personally, you and I both grew up in the time where there wasn't multiplayer. It was single-player games only. And I feel like the multiplayer-centric people went over to 360, but people that liked single-player games went to the PlayStation, PlayStation 3, because there's a lot of first-person, you know, not first-person, but single-player games on the PS3. Right. And it wasn't as focused online as it was the 360. So I kind of felt like you had two different fan bases there for a while.
Yeah, and and definitely I want to talk about the PlayStation 3 hack that actually just completely made 360 the system to own, because I think they were down for almost 4.5 months, that, you know, trying to get that network back up, and they even had to apologize, and I think they did something free with PlayStation Plus or with games and stuff, where it was just like, if your system was able to get this hack, I don't want nothing to do with it. I can't get on Hulu, can't get on Netflix, can't do the stuff that I want to do. So I'm just going to go to Xbox 360, I'm going to pay the $60 a year, and I'm going to game with my friends. I'm going to, you know, chat became a big thing on the Xbox 360 with online multiplayer, even though now people don't feel like really chatting with strangers because of, we're in a time where things are a little heated, I should say. A lot of racist remarks and things come upon. Like, the people are still trying to wondering why a 6-year-old is saying cuss words to a 34-year-old man, or, you know, people being sexist against women.
Right, the Gamergate thing, you know?
Yeah. Even before Gamergate, like, that became a, like, what is all this hatred about this, like, about this team-based thing? You heard it more on 360 than you heard it on PS3.
Well, that's the thing, was like, when I went to the 360 for, a game that really got me big into the 360 was Left 4 Dead. That was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I could play with my friends. It was awesome, and it was enjoyable. And, of course, Halo and all that stuff. I never played Gears of War, whatever.
Shout out to Deuce, waiting for his Gears of War 3 Ultimate. Did he review it? Did he talk about it yet? No, he didn't.
No.
He don't have the Xbox One yet, did he?
No, he wants to wait for the whatever, the new Gears of War 4 or whatever it is.
Okay.
Yeah, he wants to get it.
I think I'm probably going, I need to jump on the Gears bandwagon just to, hopefully they fix the control about it. I am looking forward to Gears 4. I'm looking more to Gears 4 over Fallout 4. But that's a discussion for next time. Johnny gave me that look.
Describe what, they can't see at the home. What did you just see?
I just seen you smile, just like, me and Johnny had a discussion about Fallout 4, I think, on the Bayonetta argument. Even though we're just like, we're supposed to be talking about Bayonetta, we're talking about E3. Oops. But like I said, and I'm working on Fallout 3. Because I do want to, I'm like, if I get an Xbox One and PS4, I'm probably going to get the Fallout 4 for Xbox One. Due to the modding stuff, just to see how people are being creative and stuff like that. I do look forward to Fallout 4. I will say that. I just still want them to fix those graphics. I don't have a problem with the game. Shout outs to Bethesda for a great press conference this year for their first time. But I just want them to just touch up the graphics a little bit.
I don't know, man. I've seen some really beautiful trailers for Fallout 4 too.
And,
like,
and I would say, and that's why I said I need to see it in person, like on actual TV, like at Best Buy or Target. I need to see that.
Well, because the first trailer we got online didn't do it justice. Because later on, you actually got to see a walkthrough of the game being played, and you're like, oh, okay, this is gorgeous. Like the trees are blowing, the leaves are moving with the wind individually, each leaf. I'm like, okay, they put some time into this. But you only have so much technical limitations. You know, you want to be able to game to run smoothly, correct? Yeah. So it's, you know. Anyways, back to the PS4 and PS3.
Yeah.
We like a tangent, right? The PS4, PS3, I feel like there's nothing for me personally to justify an Xbox One purchase right now. I know that sounds very fanboyish or whatever, but the only game that at all on the Xbox One that I was remotely even interested in was Sunset Overdrive. It's Insomniac.
Yeah. I know definitely for me it's Ori and the Blind Forest and Cuphead. And I do want to play Beyond Eyes. The thing that got me was the artwork. With some of the music, but the artwork for those games. I'm just like, I do really want to get an Xbox One to do Cuphead. Yes, I could do it for PC, but I don't play much PC. I prefer a console. Cuphead is just like one of those animated old school styles that I can't believe someone took a risk to do it. and it works for them. I'm mad that they're not coming. They're coming out to the next year, but definitely it's a game that I am really looking forward to. And I do want to play The Witcher 3. Everybody said that one is really good. So that The Witcher 3 is up for PS4, Xbox One. Doesn't matter. Anything else you want to say about the harshness of hardware or any problems that Sony experienced?
The only thing I would say, like, for example, like the my friend Kyle Deuce, he's actually gone through four controllers or six controllers already with the PS4. Now, I haven't had any issues. I don't know anyone else, but maybe it's how he plays. But, like, you know, the actual analog sticks, like the rubber's coming off.
Yeah, and I've heard
that before. Yeah.
I did play a PlayStation 4. I played Resogun. I seen Assassin's Creed Black Flag. They look good. Resogun is fun. That one is fun. But that's going into our 30 games, which we're going to get into. But first, we're going to take a break. So we will be right back. And we are back. And that was actually Final Fantasy IV Theme of Love for the Super Nintendo. Yes, it doesn't have anything to do with Sony, but I think Final Fantasy IV actually came on the PlayStation as a download.
It did.
Yes. Such a wonderful game. If you don't own it, I think it's available on PlayStation Network. I would have to check. If not, you should be able to find a copy. It might be expensive, but I know it came out for PlayStation 1. So do pick that up. If not, get the DS version. I don't know if it's the same thing, but if it is, that's a really good track. I've been listening to it. Johnny actually introduced that track to me, and I was just like, oh, I want to make a Final Fantasy playlist. before we actually get into the 30 games that we see, just want to give a disclaimer that the actual list from the blog that you guys read is completely different from what we're going to be talking about. So the blog is like the definitive that represents each system and what it did, how it made an impact for that system. I do want to talk about the PlayStation Plus and PlayStation Vita. We didn't give no love to those systems. The PlayStation, not PlayStation Plus, that's the PlayStation Portable, the PSP. PlayStation Plus was their online for their discounts and other things. And now that you need PlayStation Plus to do multiplayer online for PS4. But you get great deals, free games, and it's a really good system. I think it's only $50 for a year. I do have PlayStation Plus, and I'm definitely going to carry it over when I get my PS4. But want to talk a little bit about PlayStation Portable and the PlayStation Vita. Now, these were their handheld systems. Now, at the time, the DS was running the handheld game. And Nintendo, still to this day, got a lock on the handheld. But because of mobile now, it's a thing. It's kind of, you know, kind of weird. The PlayStation Portable had a UMD system. So not only were you able to play games, you were able to play movies. And it kind of worked with the, I think it worked with the PS3 when it came out, before the Vita came out. So it kind of ran the same OS on it, so you would be able to watch Netflix, Hulu, YouTube, stuff like that. When it came out, you did have to have a memory card. So, and when it first came out, it was, I think, $249. So it was kind of like almost the same price for the Wii. Later on, the PlayStation Vita came out, and it was more cartridge-based, but you still had to have a micro SD card, I think only from Sony, to save the games on there. But now it's become an indie system. So your thoughts, Johnny, on the PlayStation Portable and the PlayStation Vita?
Is this where I talk about my favorite games for those?
We'll get into that, but just talk about the systems first, and then we'll get into the list.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so I didn't buy a PSP when it first came out. Actually, I didn't buy mine until it was like, what, 3,000? Because PlayStation 3, PlayStation Plus, or I'm doing it now. PSP 3,000, right? Yeah. Didn't they have a model? This is before the Go, because no one bought the Go version. And this is when the PSP 3,000 was big because it was really good with the interface to download games, and it was really experimenting with downloading games. You still have the UMD or whatever, but like that's when I really like started to enjoy the PSP because of the library that they had. Yes. You had all this library. I liked it. I thought it was, smooth. The Vita, I personally think it's one of the best handhelds ever made. Like, I love the Vita. I play the Vita every single day, even now. I mean, I have it in the other room, but like I play my Vita every day, and it's also, it's weird now because of PlayStation Network, a lot of the PSP games you can play on the Vita now. So it's like, if you miss the PSP, it's not really that big of a deal because you can play them on the Vita, on the PlayStation Network. But great systems. I think the Vita is superior to the PSP, even though PSP has a better catalog of games, obviously.
And I do like the remote functionality that the Vita has. If you're playing the game on your PlayStation 3, you could carry it over. Or actually your PlayStation 4 also. Because I heard people who are playing Bloodborne and stuff, it was just like, well, I got a trip to fly to Japan, but I'm just play Bloodborne, on my PS Vita. Which I think it was really cool for that. And the PS Vita had was kind of touch screen based, but it's like, I think on the screen and also in the back. Now we're going to get into our list of games, the moment everybody has been waiting for. And the way that we're going to do it is that we're the top 30 games between myself and Johnny. So Johnny has 30, I have 30. We did 5 games per system, so we could kind of match the Xbox. Because of Nintendo having so many systems, their list is kind of going to be more games. But right now, just want to say that in case of people who listen to the Nintendo podcast, be like, well, why did Nintendo get this and why they get that? It's because that Nintendo has more, they've been around longer. But we're going to start actually with the PlayStation. I'm going to start first, Johnny, and then I'll let you go, and then you can start the PlayStation 2 stuff. So for PlayStation, and if you have any honorable mentions, go ahead and give those a shout in case if I've taken one off your list. So definitely for me, some of the standout games were Final Fantasy IX, Mega Man 8, Legacy of Kain, Loaded, and The Alundra.
Ooh, interesting. Pretty diverse. I like 9 is on their list. I think 9 is underappreciated because I think a lot of people, there was that shift from there was 8, then 9, and then 10 came out right with the PS. Like, it was towards the end of the life cycle of the PS, the PS1 when the PS, when that came out, and then 10 came out, and then people kind of forgot about 9, and I think a lot of people missed 9. I think 9 is a very, my personal opinion, I think 9 kind of captured that youth and that like imaginative feeling that I got from the original Final Fantasies. I really enjoyed 9.
And reason why I didn't say Final Fantasy 8, because I just think that game is,
I like the, well, RPG, we could do RPG talk another time, but like I didn't care for the battle system in 8. That was my biggest issue.
That battle system, and I hated that magic system. That was the most stupidest thing. But go ahead, what's your list?
Oh, okay. That was quick. Real quick, Alundra. I never played Alundra. I've been wanting to play it forever, but I never played it. I heard really great things.
It's on PlayStation Network.
Is it? Yes. Okay. I'll have to check it out. Okay, so in no order, I'm gonna go with Spyro Year of the Dragon.
Yes, I beat that game 100% on my first try.
I love the Spyro games in general, but like I just, it felt for me, it was Sony's way of saying, hey, we have a really great 3D platformer, you know, to go with what Nintendo was doing. Right. Obviously, they've done like Crash and stuff before, but like for me, this felt like a fully realized 3D world that you're living in. And I felt like this came out in 2000, so it was like, you know, later in the life cycle, but like I felt like it was great because it was done by Insomniac, right? So Insomniac would later on to do Ratchet and Clank for PS2, but like I felt like they just had to, you got to have extra characters you could play with, like, and it sold a lot too. It sold like 2 million units in the United States, which is crazy at that time. And again, you know, unlockables, a lot of collectibles to find, like that collector gene that I have in me. I was like, I gotta collect everything.
Thank you. See, that's why I said he's the other version of me, but just in Florida, because it's just like Crash Bandicoot did the same thing with me. I spent days and saves trying to get everything.
Yeah, so Spyro Year of the Dragon, which is the third, for people at home that don't know, that was the third game in that franchise for PS1, and the best one of it. I mean, the first one's great, but the Year of the Dragon is where you want to go, and it is available on PS Network, PlayStation Network, so give it a go.
I think I'm going to rebuy it.
It's really good. Okay, I tried to, just to pull back the curtain a little bit, Edward and I, we were kind of talking, like, we wanted to make games, try to make not typical games, but there's certain games that you have to include on the list regardless, but I try to make mine as diverse. Next one I have is Tomba 2, The Evil Swine Return.
Okay, why not the first Tomba?
The second one, actually, I thought the second one was better because there was over 100 missions in the game, so it was a big, meaty game, so when you dropped your $60 to $70 for a game, I felt like you really got like your full money's worth out of it. Uh-huh. And also really like the environment because it was kind of, for those that don't know, it's like a 2.5D platformer.
Yes.
And it was almost like a Metroidvania style. And it was overlooked a lot, but a lot of people missed it in their catalog.
Once again, definitely I missed it because it never came to my state. It came to none of the stores. Best Buy, GameStop, Target, Toys R Us, none of them had the game.
Well, it's a really great game, and it's a game that I think is on PlayStation Network.
I'm definitely buying that because I love the first Tomba.
Tomba is good, but I think the second one is superior to the first one just because they improved upon the mechanics, like the level design's better. The music is, you know, you and I love music in video games, and the music in this is fantastic. And also, this is the first game to really utilize the DualShock controller method because a lot of games, like, they didn't either have it or it wasn't an automatic function. You had to switch the button. This one was automatically set default to DualShock. So you kind of got really good use out of that controller. And I love Tomba 2. It's a fantastic game.
And a quick mention, after Nintendo came out with their Rumble Pack, Sony ended up getting Rumble in their controller. So that was good, too. I kind of like that they, now that this, besides the Wii U gamepad, the gamepad doesn't have Rumble. But I like that the controllers now have Rumble that affects when you do something.
Well, kids nowadays, they take for granted, like, everything has Rumble. And when we grew up, like, that wasn't a thing until, like, 96. Yes. So.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. So yeah, definitely check that out. It's a great game. A lot of people missed it. It was really great. Next one might sound kind of weird because it was on PC first, but I missed it on PC. Star Wars Dark Forces. And that was a first-person shooter. Did you play it?
No, I did not.
It was a really great game because it felt like, obviously there's the, later, back in the PC world, everything that first-person shooter that came out after Doom, everything called it a Doom clone. Like,
right.
You know, Duke Nukem was a Doom clone. Like, everyone was like, these are... But this was the first time that there was really that LucasArts license that felt like it was a Doom clone, but with a Star Wars license on it. And that excited me to, you know, it was to the nth degree. Like, I was so excited about it. And I remember all my friends had it on a PC and I had the PlayStation, and I still remember going through the game and just really enjoying it. Awesome. You have a full orchestral score, which is awesome, which you couldn't get in the 64, you know, Shadows of the Empire. You couldn't really get that full orchestral score.
Okay, I gotta look out for this game. I gotta find this game.
And I don't know when it was reviewed. I don't know. And honestly, the games on our list is our own personal, and obviously right. It might not match with the world's opinion of the games, but like, this is my personal opinion. And I think you can still get on eBay, like the full disc, the case and everything for like $20. It's not that expensive. I still have mine sitting over my collection over here. Great game. It's fun. And I'm not a first-person shooter fan, and that attracted to me because it was the first time that they really had that license, that, uh-huh. you know, Star Wars license attached to a first-person shooter. And you know, it's fun. It was really great. A lot of puzzles, too. Yeah, it was like it had a lot of puzzle environment.
Yeah, I'm going to look out for that one. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Street Fighter Alpha 2. Love Street Fighter Alpha 2. It just blew me away because, for those who don't know, like, obviously Nintendo really pioneered the Street Fighter franchise with the one on Super Nintendo, yeah. Street Fighter 2. And then, of course, they had the iterations later on. And then Street Fighter Alpha was good. It was different. But it wasn't until Alpha 2 that you had the alpha counters, the air blocking, the fall breaking, the super combo gauge, like up to three levels. Like, it was just, it really, and also it was the first game to have custom combo systems, too. You can, it's just awesome game. I love it. It's so good.
I love Alpha 2. See, Alpha 2 and Alpha 3 are on the same level of Street Fighter. Third Strike is good. I love Third Strike. But Third Strike, I want to say to when I start talking about the Dreamcast, because that's when I played it. But Alpha 2 and Alpha 3, Alpha 2 I love. I would probably play Alpha 2 more than I would play Alpha 3.
Yeah, well, also, it was the first game to really, like, introduce a bunch of new characters, because, you know, you had your characters, Zangief, Dhalsim, you know, all the classic, and then, of course, Jin from the first Street Fighter, which a lot of people never played the first Street Fighter, the arcade. And then you had, was it Mad Gear, who was in Final Fight, Sakura, who was a Japanese schoolgirl, or whatever, like a lot of cool, interesting characters. And I felt like for me, Street Fighter Alpha 2 was like the game that was like very experimental, but like in a good way. And it really kind of set the groundwork for later Street Fighter games. So
I love the animation in that, the graphics and the colors of that animation Alpha 2, which I love it, because when I seen it at the arcade, I was just like, somebody at Capcom has gotten back to their roots. And I was just like, this is what the Street Fighter that I look forward to. Yeah, 100%, yes. Oh, I just love Street Fighter Alpha 2. I'm sorry.
It's a great game. And then lastly, I have to, it's super typical answer, but you gave me the approval. Metal Gear Solid is a revolutionary, groundbreaking game that I could not put on my list.
It's already part of the blog, so you don't have to worry. That's why I didn't put it on my list. Metal Gear, oh my goodness, that
definitely read your blog. Read your blog. Read Edward's blog. You know, and so you can check that out. It's really good.
I love. Is this Psycho Mantis? When he reads your memory card, he's just like, oh, so you love Castlevania. I'm like, what? And switching the controller to the second port, yeah. Metal Gear Solid is deep.
Well, it's weird because, like, because of the remakes and subsequent titles, like, it doesn't, you don't, it's one of those games that I tell people about, and you don't remember it the way you used to.
Yeah.
Like, visually, because you think of Snake as he is now, but when you go back and actually play the original, like, he had no mouth, you know, and shading for eyes and no hands, like, it's just blocks.
Right.
You know, but at that time, it was revolutionary. It, for me, and this might be a bold statement, I consider Super Mario 64 one of the most groundbreaking games of our generation, besides the original Mario. But I feel like with Metal Gear Solid, that was another game that has to be in that list of groundbreaking revolutionary games.
I completely agree with you. Like, from the time you press start to the time you get to the ending, it makes video game history, like, you know, just changes it on his head. It's just like, it's one of those games to be like, if you own any Sony platform, You have got to get Metal Gear Solid. You just have to. You have to play it from beginning to end. And don't worry about the story and stuff. It's just moments in that game and stuff that you could do. But just like, this is the best stealth game that I ever played. Yeah, Splinter Cell might be a good stealth game that people might see. But I feel like Metal Gear Solid started it off and just made it just like perfected it.
And also, it perfected the use of the DualShock controller, too, yes. Which awesome. But, you know, you read your blog. You definitely got some great points on there. It's a fantastic game.
Oh, I need to finish 2 and I need to finish 3. I do have 4, but Metal Gear Solid, like the first one, I just love that game. I really do. We're going to go into PlayStation 2. And, Johnny, you're going to start us off. So, go
okay.
ahead.
This is going to be really predictable, probably. I try to make my list very diverse. I'm going to go Max Payne, the original Max Payne.
Ah, yes.
It was the first game to really, you know, obviously everyone has games. Bullet Time was really revolutionary at the time because no one really did anything like that. Oh. People kind of compared it to like a Matrix style movement where you slow down time. Obviously, what really gravitated to me was the noir style that it had,
yes.
Like kind of tongue in cheek, but then all of a sudden it would just flip on it and be super dark and super serious, like where you're like, oh my God, like it kind of hits you in the gut. You're like, wow. So the storytelling is really what got me enjoying the game. It was really dark. And I love the comic strip narrative. And you know, I was kind of yes. told through comic strips. And the voiceover work was just second to none. And it's a game that I wanted to put on my list because I think Max Payne 3, everyone played, but I don't know if a lot of people played the first one.
I know with Max Payne, it was a genre and a storyline that's never been touched in video games. Like, I cannot, besides Snatcher. Snatcher is probably the only, like, cyber noir kind of game that I could think of where Max Payne is just like, you see movies of this, but it wasn't, you know, that was only in the movie format. No video game company did what Rockstar did with Max Payne. So
yeah, it was a really good game. Another game, and it's on a lot of people's lists because it was the first time Grand Theft Auto had ever been in a three-dimensional space. Grand Theft Auto 3 uh-huh. Is on my list. I'm not a big Grand Theft Auto fan, to be honest, so this is why it's kind of surprising coming from me. But when I played Grand Theft Auto 3, the first time I drove a car around the city, my head exploded. I was like, wow!
Which is funny. That's the only PC game that I ever bought and beat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really great game. I think it's available. PlayStation done a great job of adding their classic games on the network. I think you can get it on your PS Vita or whatever, or on PS3. I think if you buy it, whatever. Great game. Definitely, you know, it's a game that if you're ever looking at like history of video games, go back to that because that was like the first time you really. It was actually quote unquote the first sandbox game if you think about it.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So at that point, it's kind of cool to see where the series was to where it is now. Yeah. Another game, this is very predictable, Final Fantasy X, just because it was the first game that I ever marathoned through.
Uh-huh.
And I marathoned like 5 nights in a row just playing the game, you know, falling asleep in and out of sessions or whatever. Just love the game, love the music. Suzanne Arkin, that piano piece, uh-huh. still gives me goosebumps
yes.
today.
That score in Final Fantasy X is like I need this. Like it was kind of one of those scores that you kind of don't get in games, and it was just like, man, that's why Square Enix is kind of the boss of role playing games. Like they just make fantastic music. I know definitely for me with Final Fantasy X, it was Auron. Auron was like my character. I mean, I love Vivi from 9, but Auron from 10 is just like, this is who I want in every game.
Yeah, and also like it was also one of the first Final Fantasy game to really feature like the, what was it, multiple characters switching in and out.
Yes.
Like, I don't think you could do that before. And so that changed up the combat system. So I really enjoyed, you know, the creativity you had when you got to fight. So
right. I think like Final Fantasy X, that's when you start seeing the evolution on how they did the battle system and how they level up and stuff like that.
So really great game. Next game on my list.
Before you go on, anyone who has a PlayStation 3, get the Final Fantasy HD. It is available for download. You can buy them separately on PlayStation Network, or if you find the box copy, you'll get both games.
And if you have a PS4 and you missed it, it's available on PS4 as well.
When is it coming out for PS4?
It's already out. Oh, you can download it right now.
Yes.
So, I didn't buy the remaster for PS3, even though I wanted to, because I think 10-2 is very underrated. I'm going to buy it for PS4. So, great game. All right. Let's see here on my list. Jack 3 from Naughty Dog.
Only because I didn't play Jack 3. Because I actually love Jack and Daxter. I love the first one, 100% that. Jack 2 turned me off.
I didn't like Jack 2.
Jack 3. I do have the Jack and Dax collection. So I need to pop it in and I need to play 3. I'm ready. I really want to play 3. I might do that tonight. I need to play 3.
Yeah, it was really, really great. It came the very end of the life cycle of the system. I mean, back in 2004 is when it released. So it was, 2 years later, you get the PS, what am I trying to say?
PS2.
PS2. So like at the end of the system, for me, it was like when you looked at the PS3. So when you look at where Naughty Dog was, because Naughty Dog, obviously they had their history with Crash and then obviously the Jack games and they go on to do other games. But like this for me was the game that made me go, okay, Naughty Dog really is taking story making seriously, because they have a really great narrative in this. Just sprawling environments, crazy weapons, solid platforming. I mean, just great top notch voice acting. Uh-huh. So like, yes. I just felt like it was a great amalgamation of just everything that I love in video games. And it was just fun to play as well. So it's a must play, my personal opinion.
I have the collection. I'm going to pop it in. I'm going to play it. I'm sorry, Naughty Dog. I respect you, but Jack 2 was just horrid. I think
Jack 2 was too experimental, and I felt like it just kind of fell flat.
When they started doing those racing moments, I'm like, oh, this is not good. Okay, yeah. So my list for me.
I got one more.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, my last one. From Tim Schafer, which was multi-platform, I think. Psychonauts. Love Psychonauts.
Okay. Everybody know that I love Psychonauts too. I bought it on the Xbox. Because I couldn't find a PlayStation 2 version, but because it was originally coming out for Xbox, and then they ported it over to PS2. Great game. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No. I love the game. I think, Tim Schafer, it's my personal opinion, the best game he's ever made to this date.
Yeah.
And he's made some great games, but this game just felt like it felt like a Nintendo 64 game, to be honest. Like, it felt like the charm that you got from Mario 64 was in here, but there's the characters are memorable. The music is memorable. The story was fun. It was entertaining. The puzzles, just the collectible aspect of it. The boss fights were all different and challenging.
Yes.
I just felt like it was just a great mix, great mix of worlds too. It made me feel like, I mean, you had Lungfishopolis, which people don't know what that is. It totally changed the whole game, the way you played the game. Yes. And like, it's just, it turned it on its head so many times that it felt, I guess the best way to say it is very fresh. It felt fresh every time you played the game. And it's a great, fantastic game.
It's mixing like that old school platform with Tim Burton's idea of A Nightmare Before Christmas. Like if you could just see those two working together, that's how Psychonauts is. And I wish that it really sold more and it got the love, because a lot of people are just like, they kind of feel regretful that they didn't play it, and it's just like, You need to find an Xbox or a PlayStation 2. You need to get you a copy of that game. If it's on PlayStation Network, download it now. Oh, download it now. Pause the podcast, spend whatever it costs.
$5.99, that's it.
Download the game. In fact,
best Xbox you spend all year.
I'm going to download the game. because I still have my physical copy for the Xbox, but I just don't have an Xbox no more. But yeah, I'm going to buy that game.
Yeah. So your PS2 list.
So for me, Final Fantasy 12. Reason why I picked Final Fantasy 12, and I keep talking about this, is I feel like it's my first introduction to MMO games. I put 70 hours into that game, and to the point where I want everybody powerful. I believe it has some of the best music. The story is weird, so don't pay attention to it, but I actually like all the characters to it. The female elf, she's awesome. She's like one of my favorite female characters. I love Lulu from Final Fantasy X. She would be in my party if I could have her for anything. The elf, the wimp girl, I cannot think of her name, so sorry about that. She's amazing. I love Final Fantasy XII. Have you played Final Fantasy XII, Johnny?
Yeah, I was actually at a electronic boutique, EV Games, back in the day. Opening midnight release. So I got the collector's edition with the tin case that has a soundtrack and the making of and the game as well. So I had a midnight release for that game. I stood in line for it.
Oh, jealousy. I'm jealous. Yeah. Okami is my
second. Oh, great game.
Oh my goodness. Those who hear the podcast, you're going to hear, you probably have tuned in, me and my friend Jonathan Eggert, we talked about personal art and our creativity. And Okami is one of the games that when it comes to graphics, Nintendo was good. A lot of other companies is good. Anyone who listens to or watch us talk on the MVC, if not, go to it. You can look it up on YouTube. When we talk about Platinum Games, they were Clover Studios. And one of their first games, besides Video for a Joke, that they brought was Okami. Because I love Japanese myth. I love a lot of stuff from Japan. Seeing the graphical art style of Okami won me over. It was one of those games that you have never seen on the system. The day that they went and did the pre-order, I went and paid the whole $50 and ran home and spent 3 weeks playing that game. Even though it's a 40-hour game, I was just like, once I got done with it, I had to play it over. And I have Okami HD on my PlayStation 3. Still to this day, one of the best games made, created. Graphically, it's Capcom's Legend of Zelda. Even though Capcom did the Legend of Zelda for the Game Boy, Oracle Seasons and Oracle
Ages.
Yeah. Seeing Clover bring that beautiful game, just like, yeah.
Well, you're pitching to the choir here, because like I did the same thing. I remember I bought it outright when it came out. I didn't pre-order, but I went day one purchase for me, and I went and bought it. And I remember just being blown away. Folks that are listening at home, you don't understand how beautiful this game is. It is like watercolor come to life. It is like you're watching, like, I don't know, like it's mind-blowing how beautiful that game was. And then also just the way it played and the whole paintbrush, like it had like RPG elements in there. Like it was just awesome. It was so good. And I argue, and I know we have friends that agree with this too, but like I say it's the best 3D Zelda.
Anyone who's seen Ukiyo paintings from Japan, this is that style, but in motion. Funny story. I love all the characters. Amaratsu is, if I ever have a girl, that's her middle name. Like, I literally want to have a girl that says, and I'm sorry having a video game name for a daughter, but Okami Amaratsu Varnil. That's what I want for my daughter's name. And she's going to be like, why did you give me this crazy name? Just be like, you have got to play Okami with me and see the beauty. This represents you. You're a beautiful girl, but I don't have no kids. So when I have some, hopefully, don't know when, that would be her name. Moving on, Onimusha. I really loved that game. I wasn't into Devil May Cry, but I missed like the Resident Evil days. Like I said, I was big into Japan. I love like their myths, stories, Federal Japan. I was big on anime and stuff. So getting a chance to play this game was just like, yes, was just an amazing game. Yes, it did have tank controls, but I think these tank controls was better than Resident Evil's. In a way. WWE SmackDown versus Raw.
Yes! Yes!
One of the best customization options in any game. I spent hours with my friend. I even bought the game for myself. Spent hours playing that game. One of the best THQ get wrestling game. THQ had the lock on wrestling games.
They did.
And SmackDown versus Raw, every iteration that came out, it's just up the ante. It was just like, now, the racing game was garbage. We won't go into that. That was pure garbage. Do not play that game. But WWE SmackDown versus Raw, my friends, they made me as a pastor, but they had me come down with a sexy walk. So I was walking down, flirting and stuff. I was just like, really? Y'all just took my custom character and just made it like that. And we would spend like 5 to 6 hours playing that game. Had so much fun. I love SmackDown versus Raw.
Yeah, it's a really great game. It's I remember this came out, what, back in 2004, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been, what, 11 years. That's been a while. But I remember it was one of the best at the time. It was one of the best announcing games. Like, you didn't really have a lot of great commentating in games, but the commentating was fantastic. And I remember like they implemented like rope breaks. So there was a lot of things that weren't in other games that they implemented in this. It kind of felt like THQ was doing the whole Madden where like if it's in the game, it's in the game. That's kind of what they were trying to do with this. And rest in peace THQ, because THQ, man, they really nailed it. With the WWE games, and I just thought the polygon count, like the way they did everything, was awesome. Full season modes, like they just threw everything in there with the kitchen sink. Like, it just, you had so many options, and it was great.
I need to play that game. I need to get with my friends to be like, pull out the PS2, load up SmackDown, and let's go. Me and my friend was actually talking about that, and we was just like, I don't care. I'll get snacks. I'll get drinks. Let's get a big screen TV, hook this mug up, and let's go at it and straight laugh like we was a kid. And my last one, Persona 3 FES. I love Persona 3. I played the FES one. I never played the original Persona 3, but still to this day, I have it on my PlayStation 3. It's just one of the best RPGs for that system. I love the dark tone on it. I actually dated the black girl, the black character, and I got my whole levels. I never cheated on her or anything. I think I joined one club, but yeah, I looked forward to Persona 3. I do own Persona 4 for my PS4 also, PS3, but Persona 3 FES, music, gameplay, dungeon design, everything. Like, I love all the characters. Like, it's an amazing game.
I never have to finish it, so I definitely would like to, you know, give it another chance.
It's going to take you a month and a half. It's long. Any honorable mentions for PlayStation or PlayStation 2 before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, for me, how do I not talk about RPGs? You know, because, like, that's, for me, PS1 was the perfect RP, other than Super Nintendo. The PS1 is arguably the second best console with the best RPGs, and there's so many amazing RPGs that came to that system that we'd be here for another hour talking about them, because there's so many great games that came out for the PS1.
Samurai Ninja Musashi. Like,
yes! Great.
Yes. I want to say Parasite Eve, but I never played it.
Two is better than one, though.
It is?
Yeah, two is much better. Just the way the graphical fidelity, like they boosted up the frame rate. I don't know how they were able to do it in the same system. The music was great. The combat, there's like puzzles and stuff. It's, two is fantastic. Two is the preferred one to play. Go ahead.
Oh, I also want to say that with PlayStation 1, not only did it have a lot of the best RPGs, it was a system that have horror games too. If you was big into horror, Silent Hill, Resident Evil, Dreamcast has some good ones too, some weird ones, but you got like D that came out. Capcom did some adventure games that was like horror, like Clock Tower, that was from Tecmo. Deception 3. It's yes. 2 or 3. I love the Deception games because I love setting the traps and killing folks. That was one of my top horror games. But just wanted to say that. Anything else?
Well, I mean, it's not the best games, but I had a lot of fond memories with Jet Moto. Do you ever play those games?
No.
Yeah, Jet Moto was like, for those at home that don't know, Jet Moto was like the futuristic world where motorcycles were hovercrafts.
Yes.
So, and it had an incredible soundtrack. It felt very RPG-like when it comes to like the options they had for the bikes. Like, you can really like customize them. And it was a licensed game too. Like, so they had like Mountain Dew bikes and like Dr. Pepper bikes.
Yes, I remember that. Yes. And SSX for anybody. Well, yes. For PlayStation 2, because I want to say Rave Race was good for the N64 Nintendo. And
it doesn't hold up as well, though, Rave Race.
Yeah, and whatever that snowboarder game that was on for N64, that was kind of good. But that's Nintendo. That's another time. Moving on to PlayStation 3. Johnny, I'm going to let you go again first.
Okay. Well, mine's, I argue that, and this is going to be a bold statement, but I argue that some of the PS3 games that came out on PS3 are going to make my top games of all time list. There's a lot of great games for PS3. Yes. And I felt like the PS3 when I got it was later in this life cycle, like 2008. Uh-huh. So I felt like I bought the system to play games. So when I bought a game, it was a game I knew I was going to try to put hours into so I could get my money's worth.
Right.
So a game that's still underrated, in my personal opinion, that is a cross of Chrono Trigger meets Pokemon by Studio Ghibli, is Ni No Kuni Wrath of the White Witch.
Oh, yes. I have it on my PlayStation 3.
It's a fantastic game. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It looks like an anime come to life. Like, the cel shading is excellent. It's got some awesome combat scenarios, great locales, heartfelt themes, motifs. I mean, Drippy is one of the cutest sidekicks I've seen since Navi from Ocarina of Time. So,
all I can say is breathtaking.
Yep.
From the I press start, and I love Studio Ghibli. I talk about them a lot. I love their animation. I started Ni No Kuni, and regardless of how long it takes, I really just like, I want to put my controller down and I want to soak all of this up and don't want to let it go. Yeah.
And I remember it was really hard to find because they weren't anticipating it to sell out like it did. And I remember, like, people were scalping the game, and like you could buy it for like $100 online, and like even now it's kind of hard to find if memory serves. So like if you have it or whatever, you'd be happy you have it, because it's definitely, they didn't produce a lot in America,
right?
So you gotta get a lot of imports, so you'd have to pay the import prices. But it's definitely a very underrated game, and underrated RPG in general. It's just a really great game.
I have the digital copy, and they were selling it for $10. For the digital.
Well, that's a steal. Oh, yeah. That's excellent.
And I seen it, and I'm just like, download. Like, just take the money. I don't care if I overdraft. Take my money now. Yeah.
It's just heartfelt and memorable, and definitely I want to get your thoughts when you beat it, because it's a few tears came down. It was a very emotional ride for me, and you know, it dealt with a boy and his mother, right? So like, obviously that hits home personal for me. Yes. So like, I just. Just a really great game, beautiful, like you said, breathtaking.
Yeah, I think I'm at the part that it's about to get good, but I'm just going to restart it from the beginning, because I just want to see everything again from the beginning. Just be like, why?
Yeah. It's got a great score as well, so.
Oh, I can't wait to hear more of the music, yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, I'm going to go with Infamous 2. From Sucker Punch.
Yes, that was good.
It was fun. It and not every game has to be mind-blowing to be good. And I felt like it was just a fun game to play. Like, it improved upon everything that Infamous 1 did.
Oh, yes. And
like, just like the physics, I don't know how they're able to do, but like the particle effects, it increased tenfold. I don't know how they're able to do it. But like, you know, just the free roaming, the running up buildings, and like, you know, the cars, like the way they would implement the cars and jumping off the vehicles, like just all that options. It just, it's, and also I'm from New Orleans, so it kind of had like that New Orleans kind of feel vibe, so a little bit biased in that way. And I really liked it.
I would say this. I want to go to New Orleans, and I want to try y'all gumbo. I really do.
Hell, I'll make you some gumbo, man. I can make it. It's good. Yeah, good stuff. Now, great game. So
before we go on, after Infamous, there is a sudden part. So I'm just going to say, did you or did you not? And I'm just going to say this.
Okay.
There's a part.
I did not.
Okay. Because I don't want to say why, but I just want to say when that part was offered, I've never seen a game do that, and that was cool. That Sucker Punch put that in the game. I thought that was really cool. So
yeah.
Of course, no, they don't know what we're talking about. If you haven't played Infamous 2, go get that game.
It's definitely something fun to play, and it's a PS3 exclusive. So check it out.
Go ahead. What's your next game?
Okay. This would be more rapid fire. I think one of the most memorable games of the past like 5 years when it comes to indie titles, downloadable titles, is Journey. I think Journey is a very special game. It doesn't resonate with everybody. I understand that. But it's a very single-player experience. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about what you get out of it. And obviously, it's on PS4 now. But, like, I remember playing Journey and just being like, where am I going? It felt like a journey like you were having, and it was a short game, but like it was a very memorable experience. You didn't really know what you were doing. Like there wasn't a lot of control options and everything, but the score by Austin Wintory, like his score was just sweeping and like beautiful. It looked really good for a PS3 game too. It's a recommended game. If you have PS4, obviously download it. It's awesome.
I'm holding out on Journey because I just, definitely for me, I didn't like the price point like you said earlier, talking about the game lift and stuff. I just feel like I understand the music and the graphics, but I was just like, this price doesn't match what this game did. Like, I kind of feel like if they would have gave it about 2 more hours, depending on what everybody's time play was, it would have been fine. I would have been like, okay, I could understand that. But I'm just like, when I found out that it was like really short, I was just like, I can't do it.
I think it's pretty cheap now. And at the time, I bought it when they were doing a summer sale or whatever. Yeah. So I didn't pay full price for it when I bought it. But
okay.
It's good. Next is a game that I've talked about a lot with my friends. It's probably the game that I've spent the most hours into a game in the past probably like 6 years. Elder Scrolls V Skyrim came out in 2011. It's on Xbox 360 as well as the PS3. But if you're taking notes, my Xbox 360 red ringed on me. So I didn't have an Xbox 360 at the time. So I had the PS3 version. And I'm not a huge fan of Western RPGs, but like this is the first game that really grabbed me. Uh-huh. And I was like, you just get lost in the world. Like, I felt like I was just lost. Like, the music was beautiful and the interaction. I've logged in 275 hours into this game. 275 hours, and I have not completed everything. And think about that for a second.
Oh, I own Skyrim. I got the game in the year edition, and I am going to get into that game and hopefully understand why everybody likes it. But yeah, that game is deep, like really deep.
Lots of options, so it's definitely a game you should check out for sure.
Now, before I get into my list, I do want to make an honorable mention, and reason why it's not on that is actually on the blog and not on my list. Mass Effect 3. I really do like the Mass Effect series. if you read the blog, you see that Mass Effect 2 is one of the best, and I give my reasons. But I really did like Mass Effect 3. I didn't have a problem with the ending that some people had. But I feel like Mass Effect 3, they got a lot of things right. They kind of like cleaned stuff up and simplified it. So I just want to give that as an honorable mention. But my list for PlayStation 3, Vanquish. This is Mega Man 3 in the HD modern age. Vanquish is so fun. Balls to the walls, crazy. But you sold on that one game mechanic, but everything is like really flawless. Like, Clover did great graphics for Okami. They upped the ante with Platinum, upped the ante because they were former Clover employees. They upped the ante with Vanquish. Like, Bayonetta 2 is beautiful beyond beautiful. But if you see what they did with Vanquish and just the gameplay, like the cover mechanics, sliding, going to slow motion, and, you know, you slide in and then you just kick a little enemy, like, down and then slow motion and shooting him, it's automatic fun. Just like, just a great game.
I really like Vanquish. Vanquish, for me, you told slow down time, but they called it the AR mode, augmented reaction mode. And I remember, like, the first time I saw that, I was like, all right, this is pretty sweet. And I felt like it was great because there was also the blade system where you could throw up to 3 weapons, you know, in total of 8 different weapon types. So, like, there's a lot of customizations there. Uh-huh. I really liked. And then there's like quick time events too, which I thought were done properly. And then the great cover system. So I just thought it played well. It looked great. And I do see what you mean by like the spiritual successor there and all that. So it's a great game.
I still haven't found all the trophies. I'm still going through the game trying to look everywhere for those trophies. My next game, and I talked about this, if you read my blog, The Forgiveness in Games, I used this one game as one of my research, but it's very heart-wrenching to me. It's such a still a good game. Heavy Rain. There's something about this story, and me feeling for the characters. I don't care what anyone say about Quantum Dreams, and, you know, with Fahrenheit and all the other stuff, even with Beyond Two Souls and stuff like that. Heavy Rain is a must play. And it's kind of like a choose your adventure quick time event, but, you know, the score is literally still to this day outstanding. But just feeling the main characters, his emotions, and just, you know, going through all of that stuff, and trying to get to a real conclusion and stuff. I was heavily invested, and it really taught about not only forgiving others, but it kind of showed that the emotion of forgiveness, of forgiving yourself. And you don't get that in games. Like, in some role-playing games, you kind of see it. Even with Cloud in Final Fantasy VII, he gets to a part where he starts, you know, he kind of forgives himself, and then he's able to be the Cloud that you want him to be. There's something in just Heavy Rain, just like, you know, it's when something is not your fault, but you feel like it's your fault, that can be really mentally, like, on you. And it takes a long time to get to the point of forgiving yourself before you can do anything to move on. And I'm glad that Heavy Rain was created to teach that. Some people didn't really like it. Some people thought it was very predictable. They didn't like the cute quick time events. But I picked it up and was just invested from the beginning.
Let me chime in, because yes, you hit a very, like, important point for me, because Heavy Rain, like, I played Quantic Dreams of the game. I actually really liked. I've liked every Quantic Dream game, yeah. Even beyond good Two Souls or whatever. But Heavy Rain is a must play. It is a top 20 game of all time game for me. Seriously, period. I know that's a bold statement. It's a top 20 game of all time game for me. That's how important this game is to me, and how memorable this game is. Like, I still think about this game, like, it came out, what, 2011? I don't remember what it was. 2010? So. What was it?
2010. Yeah. 2009 or so, 10, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm still thinking about that game 5 years later. That's how much of an impact that game had on me. And I love, like you said, the score is amazing, but I love the decision making, and there's no right or wrong way to play the game.
Right.
Like, everything you do has an outcome. And I like that you don't feel like, oh, I got this, or I messed up, or, because once someone dies in the game, spoilers, they're gone for the rest of the story. And the game actually changes the shape that when that happens. And I just feel like it's great narrative storytelling, phenomenal voice acting, great motion capture. Just, it's an almost perfect game. Like, period. It's so good.
And it's one of the games that I'm just, that I it's one of the games that played on my emotions and my morals. Because my thing is just, like, I want to fight evil, and I want to see my main character get his son back. I want everybody to accomplish what they need to accomplish.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, well, and also, and this is not a spoiler, but there is a pivotal point in the storyline that makes you go, oh, everything I was doing, it makes you feel something, either good or bad, depending on, you know, how things go. But, like, there is a pivotal point in the story that not a lot of games do, and you know what I'm talking about. But, like, it makes you feel something when you play it. Like, I don't know, like, it hit me really hard when it happened. So, you know what I'm talking about, but yes. It's a great game.
I might have to revisit that game. My next game, this is my indie game, just like Journey was for you, Guacamelee. That
excellent game
is a Metroidvania style game, but like I went crazy for SmackDown versus Raw to see wrestling and action put together in a Metroid game style. The music and them paying a lot of homage to Nintendo sneaking in that was funny. I never played the 2-player, but I do like I still want to go back because there's stuff that I'm missing. But I love turning into a chicken and running real fast instead of as my morph ball. It's still a great game. I got the original one. They did put out like a Turbo Champion version for Wii U and for PS3. I think they got it also for 360 or Xbox One. So if they got them all,
it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
That's a recommended game to get. Saints Row 3. I'm sorry, Grand Theft Auto 3. I know you love it. Saints Row 3 tops it. Saints Row 3 tops the whole Grand Theft Auto. When I started driving a car and a tiger is in the back hitting me and going to a party where one of the characters say, "These hoes ain't real hoes," and they start shooting up the place, it's zany. It's the most zaniest, craziest game I ever. My friend got me hooked on it, and I was just like, wow, this is how you kind of do open world games in a comedic kind of level. And then seeing Burt Reynolds in the game, I fell out laughing. I'm just like, yeah, but the escorting a tiger and he hitting me, that was just funny.
Yeah, it's a fun game. It's like you said, it's very zany off the top, you know, like just, you know, it's random, right? And that's what I liked about the game was you didn't know what was coming next. So it was a lot of fun. And like you said earlier, not every game has to be groundbreaking and emotional like Heavy Rain.
Yes.
Games can just be fun, and they make you feel good. So, and I think that's one thing with Saints Row to the Third. It's just fun.
And like I said, Grand Theft Auto 3 is the pioneer of open sand games, like you said earlier. And I respect everybody who likes Grand Theft Auto 3, but I think Saints Row 3 just did, like, when it wants to do zany comedy in the game, it did it. You know, I think that's when they found, like, we can't be Grand Theft Auto, so let's be ourselves. And a lot of people might get mad at me at this last one, but I really don't care. It's my list. DMC Devil May Cry. The best action game on the PS3. In the Devil May Cry franchise, Ninja Theory got it down like with DLC Devil May Cry. Music, art direction, story, the action. I played this game for like a week, and man, it's simple, but yet it's very mechanical. Kind of like almost like Bayonetta 2, but I kept coming back to it, and I'm just like, it's dark, it's twisted. I actually prefer this character design than the regular Devil May Cry, the regular Dante.
Yeah, it was interesting because it pushed the PS3 to its limits when it comes to processing because of they tried to push the frames per second as much as I could and keep it a locked frames. And I remember just how fluid the game played and how smooth it was. And it was just a lot of fun to play. And I do like the kind of twist on the story as well. And just the way, like, if you played the original, that's fine. You didn't have to. It wasn't like you had to play it. And I think it was kind of a great introduction to the series for people that hadn't played it before. It was just a lot of fun playing it.
And I just want to say that Devil May Cry 2 could stay in the garbage that it came from. Because that game was just a horrid mess. Moving on to PlayStation 4. Now, I have not owned this system, and the games that I kind of pick from it, is games that I am interested in playing. So I'm going to kind of go through, because I don't know, Johnny, some might be on your list, but Bloodborne, Metal Gear Solid 5, Infamous Second Son, Until Dawn, and Resogun.
Wow, none of those are on my list, except for one. One's on my list.
Okay. You could go, because I haven't played none of them, but Metal Gear Solid 5, I am interested in playing. The trailers for that game still is jaw-dropping good. I'm like, goodness, this Fox engine is ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I have friends that are playing it, and I definitely want to check it out soon. It looks, it looks good, because I've played all the Metal Gear games, and I feel like I have to play it, to see what happens next. Looks great. What was the other games on your list one more time?
Bloodborne, Infamous.
I want to play Bloodborne. I'm not a fan of the Souls games, but I hear this is a little bit easier to introduce someone to. It looks great. I love the art style.
Yeah. Infamous Second Son.
I platinumed that game. I enjoyed it.
I do want to play. I love the Infamous series.
It feels like a little bit of a departure, though, from the other Infamous games, but... It's a fun game that you definitely should check out.
I do want to check it out. Until Dawn, that looks good. And Resogun. Resogun, like I said earlier, I have really fun playing.
Well, that's on my list. Resogun's on my list. It's a game I still come back to 2 years later. It's a fantastic game. Pays homage to Defender, Gradius, all those type of side-scrolling, shoot 'em ups, shmups, or whatever. Like, it feels... It's really, really, a fun game. Great particle effects. Awesome. It's easy to pick up and play. Like, you don't have to be crazy good at it. Yes. It does get challenging. I like the level design. And then, of course, they've added DLC as well. So there you go. That's one off my list. Resogun is a must play. I think it's cheap, like $15 or $10, something like that. Definitely check it out. Here's the irony, Edward, is my list is all indie games. The rest of my list on PS4.
That's completely fine. That's completely fine.
Velocity 2X. I love Velocity
2X. I see that. I want to play that.
It's on Vita as well. But I really, really love Velocity 2X. It's because there was a game on PSP called Velocity, and then they had a re-up version for the Vita, and then now they have Velocity 2X.
Go ahead, because when I get to my Vita list, you're going to be like, okay, yeah.
it kind of reminds me of, like, I don't know, like a 16-bit era game. It has that same feeling to me. Because this one actually introduces platforming into the game. So you're actually out of the ship, which I didn't know was going to be good or not, but it's actually really good. And it takes a while to beat, too. There's over 50 levels, and you get ranked. Each level gets a star ranking. So, of course, I want to try to rank out. And I haven't even got best score yet out of the 50 levels. So it's a game you can come back to. Easy to pick up and play. Yeah. It's one of those things where you can be like, oh, I have 10 minutes to kill. Get in and get out. It's just a great game. It's fun. Next game is a newer game. Rocket League. Rocket League is really fun. I like sports games, but I haven't played sports games in years. And Rocket League is just the most fun I've had. in a long time. Like, it's just fun.
A lot of people are saying that, so I'm interested in playing that too.
I'm not even a fan of soccer, and now it's like I love it. It's just, it's a fun game. It's cross platform with PC. It's not any other console but PC and PS4.
Right.
Fun. Definitely check it out. Now these other two will be very obvious because they're very highly regarded games. Shovel Knight, obviously we've done, talked about Shovel Knight before.
Yes.
Shovel Knight is a must play. It's on Wii. It's on the Wii U. It's pretty much everywhere.
Everybody get the soundtrack. If you could get a hold of the soundtrack, you need to have this in your life. That soundtrack is so good. Amazing.
Okay, and then let's see here. Last one is a game that surprised me from Ubisoft, Child of Light. Very, yes. Very much surprised me.
Yes.
It's on PS3 and PS4. Is it on 360? I can't recall.
Yes.
I know it's on Wii U. It's pretty much everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It feels like a JRPG, but it's not. Because it wasn't made it was made from a Montreal studio, in Japan. And it feels like a JRPG. And it's beautiful, awesome score. It's like a fairy tale come to life, and it's just enthralling. It's not for everybody because I know some people couldn't get into it, but it's just a game for me personally that kind of hit at the right time, and it was fun to play. It got because the PS4 doesn't have a lot of RPGs on it. It kind of scratched that itch for RPGs, and it sold pretty well too, from what I hear. So they're gonna get a sequel. So. And it's, of course, on Vita as well, and all that, so it's everywhere. So.
All right. That was our console. Did you have one more, or that was it? Any honorable mentions for PlayStation?
I mean, honorable mention, I enjoyed Dragon Quest Inquisition. It's a fun game.
I just bought it for PlayStation 3.
It's good. I think you'll really enjoy it. Okay. It's deep, too. Over 100 hours to complete the main campaign. It's pretty deep, really fun. Kind of pays homage back to older school RPGs, kind of like with all the side quests and stuff. Good voice acting, it's really good. But to be honest with you, like mainly other than like looking for Fallout 4 coming out, I'm like been playing the indie games, the downloadable titles, and I guess all games are downloadable now. But like the non-retail games, I'm just enjoying them. Like I probably put 200 hours into Rocket League. It's just so much fun.
I could believe that. I think a lot of people have. Like, a lot of people, I think they want it as an e-sport title. People just like, you need to make this as an e-sport thing. I will watch it. Trust me. If someone said we're doing a Twitch tournament to raise money, I would sit down and watch it. I'll donate $10 and be like, okay, I want to see this.
Yeah, it's fun.
So, we're now going to the portable section. PlayStation Portable. Mine is Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core, Patapon. I just love Patapon, Patapon, Pata, Pata, Patapon. This is something about the music in those characters. Loco Roco, Mega Man Powered Up, and Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep.
Yeah, I actually have Patapon's on my list as well. The first one, I enjoyed the heck out of it. Yeah. It's just a fun game. And it's very intuitive with the button control, the timing, and the music, and I never seen a game like it. It's very, very creative. Enjoyed that game a lot.
Did Fat Princess come out the PSP? I know it came out for PlayStation 3, but was it a PSP game too, or was that Vita?
What was?
Fat Princess.
That was a PS3 as well.
Oh, okay.
That was a fun game.
All right. Oh, but go ahead.
For my PSP list, I'll just go through them real quick. God of War, Ghost of Sparta, really surprised me because I like the God of War games. I've beaten them all, and I've enjoyed them. They're nothing mind-blowing, but they're fun to play.
Yes.
But the actual Ghost of Sparta storyline actually gave me chills. Like, I was like, wow. Like, I wasn't expecting this to be like it felt like a full console game on a handheld. Wow. And think about it. This is before the Vita came out. This is PSP. So it really blew me away when I saw it. I was just like, this feels like a console-worthy game. You could beat it in 7 hours, but the storyline's just awesome. Fantastic. Hands down, must play for PSP. And then Hot Shots Golf Open Tee. There's a...
I forgot all about that series. Hot Shots is good. I love that
it's
series.
Fun because it's just a fun arcadey golf game. You don't have to have any knowledge of golf. It kind of tells you how to play. It's fun. And that's all you need to know. It's just great.
That's by Camelot, right?
Yes. Yes. It's really, really good. And then the Gradius collection, Gradius, however you want to pronounce it, it had 5 games in it, and it's awesome. It kind of... Because, you know, Gradius back in the NES days has Gradius. It has Gradius 2. It has Gradius 3. And it had a arcade game, Gradius Gaiden, which was only in Japan released on the original PlayStation that they ported over for this collection, which is really, really cool. And then Gradius 4 Resurrection. And Gradius is the same thing. It's like, you know, the precursor to Resogun. It's like the side-scrolling shoot 'em ups. And it's a great collection. It was cheap. $20 for all 5 games is a steal. Then it's an awesome series.
Yeah.
And then the game that I've played the most on PSP that I've probably logged 200 hours into is Final Fantasy Tactics, War of the Lions.
Yes.
Arguably the best way to play this game. And I know that's a touchy topic because I've played every Tactics version, the DS, whatever. I mean, not DS, but the Advance. I've played them all.
Yeah.
And this version takes, like, the seriousness. Because that's the thing we need to tell the folks at home is each iteration is a lot different from the last. Because the original is very, I mean, it felt more dark and more serious.
Right.
And then the Advanced remake was very, like, lighthearted and campy and fun. And so it had a different feeling. And War of the Lions just kind of took all that out and was like, this is about the game. This is how you play. This is how you unlock. This is how you control. And it was very focused on classes and, like, so War of the Lions is, in my personal opinion, the best way to play it. It's not necessarily the best game because I prefer the PS1 version.
Yeah.
But the way to play it, if you had one, and it's available on Vita too. You can transfer it over to Vita. Great.
I think strategy games like that are just best on handheld. Because, I mean, you could divide up your time and stuff. I mean, it's fun. It's okay if you play it on PC or play it on a console. But yeah. Playing that game on the handheld, yes. That's all I can say, it's just yes.
So yeah, that's my PSP list.
Okay. And last but not least, PlayStation Vita. I don't know how you want to go about this one.
One of the games you mentioned on your PS3 is on my Vita list, so I guess we should mention that real quick. Guacamelee, I played it first on Vita before I played it on PS3.
Okay.
And I love Guacamelee, because... like you said, it's great. So that's off my list.
For a PlayStation Vita, Persona 4 Golden.
It's on my list too.
Velocity Ultra. Danganronpa, Tearaway, and Dragon Crown.
Dragon Crown's great. I've only played it on the PS3, but it's a lot of fun. Like a lot of customizations and whatnot. I never played Tearaway, and I hear it's coming to PS4, so I'd be curious to see how that...
Yeah, Tearaway's out now. Anyone who owns a PlayStation 4, Tearaway's out now, so do...
Oh, it's out now. It's already out. Yeah,
it's out.
Oh, okay. So that's a great list.
Yeah, it's been out for about a month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Danganronpa, they're just like Phoenix Wright meets high school. With a dark tone.
I wanted to play Danganronpa because I hadn't had a chance to check it out, but I've heard really great things from a lot of people, so I definitely want to check it out.
And I know they announced 3 at the Tokyo Game Show, but that's all I know for right now.
And then you mentioned Persona 4 Golden, which is on my list as well. I haven't finished it. This game is huge, huge.
Yeah.
And I almost get kind of overwhelmed because there's so much to do in the game with the romances and, like, all the social connectivity, and the soundtrack's fantastic. And, like, it's like a murder mystery novel, but turned into a game. It really is. It's awesome. It's a must own for the Vita. You get your money's worth out of it because it takes forever to beat. I've not even finished it yet. I don't know how many hours I have it to
do. Now, Johnny, before you go, are you planning on getting to play Persona 5?
I'd like to.
Okay. If you get it and you get it for PS4, please let me know, because you'll probably see like a post, or you'll probably see a video of me like running somewhere, getting the game, and then running crazy. Be like, I got Persona 5. Leave me alone for the next 2 days.
I guess the rest of my list, Hotline Miami, I really loved.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, I love the soundtrack. It had like an 80s vibe to it, which caught me off guard. Very brutal, very hard. Like, you're going to die thousands of times. No joke.
Yeah.
In the game. And it's just, it's a top-down bird's eye view of, it's kind of like a Grand Theft Auto, the original Grand Theft Auto, kind of the way I equate it to. But it's just, you're trying to get from one point to the next point without dying, and you're killing the enemy, and it's one-shot kills. So it's very Dark Souls-y, kind of like. Yes. And it's fun. I don't like Hotline Miami 2 as much, but Hotline Miami is an awesome B-Day game. Now, this one might surprise you. It was actually free for PlayStation Plus about 8 months ago. Zero Escape Virtue's Last Reward. Are you familiar with that series?
Yes, it came out for DS.
Yeah, it was $9.99.
Yes, I really need to buy that. And I'm sad to say that, once again, Atlas games do not come to my city. They just don't. And it's just like, only way I could buy this is by a digital copy. Because if I try to go to GameStop might get one copy, and then it's sold out.
Yeah, it's not required to play the DS version. I actually did the opposite. I played the Vita version, then went back to play the DS version. But once you do know both storylines, it makes Virtue's Last Reward, the sequel, even better, because you find out like this crossover and stuff. Yes. But why should you play this game? Let me give you an example. It's one of the best survival storytelling I've ever read or ever played in a game. It's survival based. The storylines are amazing and intense. And like, I got goosebumps playing this game because I felt it. You know how some horror games like make you feel uneasy? Well, yes. This has like, made me feel like it's just a horror game at times, because it was so uneasy. Like, the things that were going on in this game, I'm like, how did they put this in this game? And like, it's just every decision, and I actually platinum the game, which is a huge deal.
Exactly.
Because it takes forever, because you go through and storylines arc, just to get FYI, you have like a skill tree almost, but it's not skills, it's your story path.
Right.
And it's really great because you'll go down this one story path, which will unlock more story paths, and then if one story path ends, and there's another, and you can go back and see the other choice and continue on down. And the beauty of it is, there's like a deja vu moment, because you'll go through one story path and then you go to the next story path, and then characters will somehow remember the other story path, and it's just, my mind exploded when they brought back references. It's a very deep game. It's not for everybody, because it does require a lot of time to really get into it. It's a game that I felt like reading. It was almost like when you read a really good book and you don't want to put it down. That's how this game was. And I didn't know I was going to platinum it, but I was like, all right, I'm going to spend 50 hours at 50 into this game. I'm going to spend that much time. And that's how much time I put it, 50 hours into this game to platinum it.
I know Nintendo, one of the Nintendo Power, before they went out of business, they actually interviewed the developer, the creator of that. And it was such a good interview that I was just like, I feel bad that I missed it, and I really need. I think it's on 3DS. I think 999 is on 3DS, so I gotta check. Definitely when I pick up a Vita, if I can find one, and hopefully I'll be able to find one with ease. That might be like the first game that I download, like that I get.
Yeah, and they actually announced a third game, which is really a big deal, because it was really hiatus the series, and then they got the green light. They're gonna make a third game, so I'm all about that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's a must play. Well, if you like the style of games, it's really good. My last game on the list is, of course, on a lot of lists, Uncharted Golden Abyss. I had a blast playing it. It felt like a console game,
yes.
And it was fun to play. It's great.
It pretty much sold the system for a lot of people. I do want to give a funny shout out to the developers who made the Call of Duty for PlayStation Vita. I think that was one of the, I think that and Killzone was one of the two lowest rated games for that system.
Oh, wow.
They said that Call of Duty was absolute garbage. And I don't want to throw them under the bus, but I kind of wanted to give them a shout out to be like, guys, make sure that when you make a game for that system, that it be top quality. Make sure that it don't come out trashy and stuff like that.
Well, let's talk about this real quick. I think the problem was, is they, Sony tried to make, they tried to market Vita as a console on the go.
Yes.
And with Uncharted, they really made it look like it because it felt like a console game on the go. And there's a lot of great games on the Vita, but nothing really ever hit that console quality other than Uncharted, really. I don't think any other game really hit that peak, that pinnacle of greatness. And not to mention, I mean, Vita was a great system for indies and all that, but like,
right,
just from a console quality game, I don't think any other game really ever lived up to Uncharted Golden Abyss. And also, I think the third party support really hurt because there was, other than like the indie titles, there wasn't really another type of games on it other than indie titles. Wasn't any first party titles either. I think Freedom Wars is the last, which I didn't get to play.
Yeah.
Freedom Wars was like the last first party title for the system.
And a lot of people were just like, that Borderlands 2 that came out, they were just like, no, don't get this. If you played the console, stick with that. Only one that I can actually think of was Soul Sacrifice. They said that one was good.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed that. That was from the Monster Hunter creator, isn't it?
Yeah.
And actually, I have it on the cartridge. Enjoyed it. I put about 30 plus hours into it. Got distracted by the game, but when I played of it, I enjoyed it. It was fun.
And they said Rayman Legends, but it
includes, beautiful game.
I'm saving that for something else, so that's why I didn't put it on this list.
Right.
But that is our 30 games.
Thanks for staying with us. It was a long list.
It's kind of the same thing with the Xbox brand. Like, we went 60 games, and we kind of had like 60 games plus, so we did a good job. Yay.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break before we get to the end of the show, so we will be right back. And we are back, and that was Luminous Remixes Winter, I think. And actually, Luminous is one of the music games that did come out from Q Entertainment. Mizuguchi, the person who made Res, he's the creator of the Luminous series. Such a good game. It mixes music and puzzles together. So if you own a PlayStation 2, because that's where I played it at, it definitely must get if you love music games like that. So our last part that before we get on out, because we spent some time on Sony, so you can't say that we don't love Sony, because we do. Where do we think Sony's gonna go from here? they are now getting to the virtual reality with Project Morpheus. And because of Tokyo Game Show, they renamed it the PlayStation VR. I heard a lot of good things that PlayStation VR was really good for people who want to play games if they don't want an Oculus. That's the direction that they're kind of heading. They said it's going to go with their PlayStation 4 sometime in the future. They haven't released the price or any more information. All I know for right now is that because of Tokyo Game Show, they just had a name change. Johnny, do you know or do you have a prediction on where Sony could go on from here?
Well, I think with the project, what is it called now? The PlayStation VR?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the PlayStation VR, I personally don't have a lot of experience with virtual reality games, so I don't know how well it's going to do. I hope it does well for Sony because I want Sony to do well.
Yes.
But I think they're going to be the first ones to drop the mic and go digital only. Boom. I think they're going to say, hey, no more. No, they're going to be the first ones out the gate that go, hey, no more, disc-based games. It's digital only from this point on. I feel like with numbers are going to back that up. They're selling a lot of digital games now, even more so than, now obviously the first party titles, they sell a lot of disc-based for those, but any cross like platform games, there's because of the system right now with the PS4, a lot of people are buying digital games and with large hard drives and people upgrading the hard drives. I think that they're going to be the first ones to really go take this out of the equation and just make a system or continue on with the PS4 and not have any more discs. So I think they see the future. And Sony's always been led the charge. They've always been the pioneer for CD-ROMs and DVDs and Blu-rays. Right. Like they've been the step of the head of the curve. And who's to say that Project PlayStation VR doesn't do amazing? It could do amazing. And then they kind of pioneer the virtual reality world. So who knows how that goes. But I think they're going to be the first ones to really cut away the discs and just go digital.
Do you think they'll probably do that with PlayStation 5?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if they're too concerned about PlayStation 5 right now. Right. I know gate systems are always in development, but there was a 10-year life cycle with the PS3, right? So I felt like they're not really, I mean, obviously there's probably blueprints out there, but I don't think they're really focused on the 5 right now. I think they want to see how the PlayStation VR does, and that's going to determine a lot. Price is going to determine a lot as well.
Yes.
And what games, because for me personally, I don't need games for me personally, if it were me buying it, I don't need games for it. I would love interactive experiences, augmented reality. Like I would be totally okay with just extended, experiences around you because right. Nothing beats having a controller in your hand. And that's some kind of bias that way.
But I hope with PlayStation VR, definitely for me, a person who wears glasses, that it's comfortable when I put it on. That's what I, and that it don't irritate my eyes where I just look at part of it, then I need to take it off. So I hope that, that thing happens. I don't think they're going to get back into the handheld space. I think PlayStation Vita is kind of like, that was it. We learned our lesson. We'll let Nintendo and mobile get on it. I don't know if Sony is still in the mobile space right now that I know of with their games or anything. It's good that you can still buy games for your console on your phone and stuff. I do like that. So they might continue that when it comes to the PlayStation 5. I don't know how many people are doing it, but that's something that I think they'll probably emphasize. Be like, hey, just a reminder, if you guys own the phone, and you can own our app, you can buy this game for your system so you don't have to wait. They still doing like midnight digital release. So, like right at 12:01, the game release. Hopefully, they let you use an external hard drive and not have to take out the 500 gig and put in a new one, and then you just got to keep switching. I hope they get on the bandwagon with Nintendo or Microsoft that you can get a 2 terabyte at your own on your own and just save games there.
Yeah, I think the hard drives in general it's been an issue, because I know me personally, my hard drive is 500 gig hard drive for my PS4, but like there's several times where it's almost been filled up. I had to delete stuff, you know, because games are huge. Game files are what, 40 to 60 gigabytes for, you know, a big AAA game. So being able to like put a external hard drive attached to it would be killer, be awesome. But what would Sony do though? My question is, would Sony put out their own proprietary version of a hard drive that you'd use, because would they lose money if you were able, you know what I mean? Like, what if they made one that was a Sony one that only read with a Sony, you know, would that be something they would do?
I think because of what they did with the PlayStation Vita, with their micro card, and, you know, you having to get the 32-bit gig to really save games. Well, they didn't send that to a lot of stores. They send the 8 gig, but they didn't send it to 32. And they charged up the wazoo for them.
Yeah, so, it was like $50 for just the 32 gig one.
Well, for some people, they had to end up paying
$100. Wow.
And, yeah, because they couldn't find, because the 32 gig was, I think, was only at the Sony stores. Like, you couldn't go to any other store and find it. And the problem with the Vita, because of that microchip thing of the SD card, you wasn't able to use anything else. It had to come straight from Sony. So I don't think they're going to do that. If they do it, they'll probably do a 1 terabyte gig PS4 to catch up with Microsoft. If they release their own external hard drive, It's got to be priced reasonably, and it really has to be in stock, because if they do what they did with the micro SD for the PlayStation Vita, they do that deal again with stores, no one's going to buy it. People are just going to complain and be like, I need an external hard drive to save.
Yeah, and also you look at, and people buy Sony products, obviously, this is what the whole show is about. But remember with the camera, right? It was so in demand, like they couldn't keep it in stock. Right. And I feel like they weren't producing as fast as they could. And there's some great external hard drive. I bought me like a little notebook. That's actually, let me see if I can do this. I actually have a notebook here. That's like a WD, and this is 4 gigabyte. And it's cost me like $150. It was cheap.
You said 4 gigabyte.
Oh, not four terabytes, excuse me.
Okay.
4 terabytes.
Where did you find that at? Because I got I actually got the big WD for my Wii U, and I got a 2 terabyte one. Well, that's the only reason that it could go up there. I didn't even know they had the 4 gig terabyte one.
Yeah, the 4 terabyte. Yeah, it's really cool, because like I take it everywhere I go, and like if Sony's smart, I think they will allow that option. I know there is a reader, there is an offshoot, like, attachment that you can attach to your PlayStation 4 that will allow you to read, but I don't know if I trust it. Imagine trying to save a game to it, and it's not... Because we all know how Mad Catz was back in the day with memory cards, so...
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, I don't know if I would jump the gun. I think if Sony was like, all right, this is included in our firmware update, then I'd be okay with it, but I'm not going to trust an outside party to kind of, you know, hack into the system or whatever. Yeah. And to make it read it correctly, but
just like you, if it don't say WD, I'm just not fooling around with it. Or even scanned. Well, scanned, this is more USB for me, and the SD card. But like external hard drive, if it don't say WD, I'm not spending the money. So
yeah, I have a lot of people that had issues with Seagate external hard drives.
Just no for me. I said.
To answer your earlier question again, to expand on that, where does Sony go from here? Like, what does Sony do? I feel like Sony, like you said earlier, they won't go handheld, but I wouldn't necessarily say they wouldn't get in the mobile space. Yeah. Because there was the PlayStation Mobile, and they had some stuff on there, but like it was only for, I think, Sony phones, Xperia phones. I don't think you could get it on anything. So I think Sony's going to watch. Sony's very smart. They like to sit back and watch what happens. And I think they're going to end up doing that with Nintendo. Nintendo is doing the mobile space soon. They're supposed to be releasing it. And they're looking out, you know, Pokemon companies release the Pokemon Go next year. And, like, they had Pokemon Shuffle. And, like, there's a lot of, you know, companies are experimenting with that because they want to hit everybody. Imagine if you're a company, you want to capitalize as much money as you can and make the most profit you can. And if Sony can get in and say, hey, what if we have Vita games since we're not doing a Vita anymore? What if they could take developers and be like, all right, we're going to make games, you know. I don't know how that would work because I guess it would have to go through iOS or Google Play anyway. So, but Sony would still take profit out of, you know, take cuts, I guess.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see them hitting the mobile space because I know Microsoft is kind of hitting the mobile space with Windows 10 and stuff. I'm like, yeah, you got tablets and stuff, but I'm like, they still consider that as mobile. So I'm like, the Surface and maybe I think the iPad and stuff like that, that can interact with your Xbox One. So, you know, like indie games and sharing and stuff like that, you know, that's going to work good for Microsoft. I think Sony will probably get in. I think what they might do is that they might help indies get onto mobile and take a little cut from it. Just be like, if you play this on the PlayStation, now play it on your Android or your iPhone. And, you know, Sony be like, they did the good on our system, and we can market you guys well on mobile, too. I think that would be good for them.
Also, think of PlayStation Smart. They figure out a way to give PlayStation Plus people another reason to play. You know, like, imagine they go, all right, if you're a PlayStation Plus member, you get a discount on the mobile version of this game. I think that would be very smart, too. They kind of look. I don't know how they'll do it, how they'll be able to verify it. Maybe you have to sign in through the PlayStation app or whatever, but I think that would be really cool.
I think they'll probably do like the PlayStation app and be like, oh, okay, you got the mobile thing. Okay, we'll give you 25% off because you already own this.
Why not?
Or continue keep it cross-buy.
That'd be awesome. That'd be great. Because one thing we didn't mention, and I know we're running really long, this is a huge show. I think Sony has failed when it comes to, I forgot to mention this earlier, when it comes to the Gaikai purchase. And they were doing the whole PlayStation Now. Yeah. They dropped the ball on that.
Yeah, that PlayStation. And there was just a story today that I've seen on Destructoid that Japan now just got PlayStation Now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. So I'm just like, well, I can see you guys want to make a profit off of that form of backwards
compatibility.
But Microsoft is kind of, well, Nintendo already beat both of them to the punch. That's just given. But Microsoft saying, yeah, you guys could later on this year do your 360 games and we'll release a list of what games you guys could play. That kind of got a lot of people excited to be like, I'm going to pick up Xbox One because I have a lot of games that's on my 360.
That's huge. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do digital space, but imagine like if you had a game that you downloaded, like Shadow Complex, for example, is only on 360. Imagine you bought that game like 8 years ago, and all of a sudden they go, anything that you purchase back on the 360 is compatible, downloadable immediately. That's a game changer, in my personal opinion. Like, I think that's because I have, look at you and I together. We have a back catalog of PS1, PS2, PS3 games. Imagine if Sony goes, all right, all those games you own, you drop them in your PS4, and they're free to download. Like, that would just be mind-blowing, right?
Heck yeah. Well, not even that. For PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2, yeah, I can understand. If they just see the trophies that you have on your PlayStation 3, bam, unlock the game already for PlayStation 4.
That's a good way to do it, actually. I think if you already have it unlocked.
I mean, because I'm just like, You can't do backwards capability with companies that's already closed and no one picked up the title. Yeah, Darksiders is another story. But I'm just like, what are these companies that came up with a huge game and the developer closed and you can't get it no more? I'm like, well, if it shows that you actually bought the game, just release the digital version on PlayStation 4 for free because you already own it. We already see that you got the trophies. Bam. Here, take it.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's interesting. We'll see what happens, but I just thought the PlayStation Now just is a train wreck and it's not worth the price. If the pricing models are weird, each game is different. It just, there's not like a set pricing. And even as a subscription, quote unquote subscription, you're only getting PS3 games. They originally announced it was PS1, PS2, and PS3 a long time ago. Now it's only PS3. There's only 100 titles, which is, there's some good games in the list, don't get me wrong, but I don't feel like it's worth the money, in my personal opinion.
Well, and everybody says, just like, you get the game, the physical copy, or even PlayStation, if you're a PlayStation Plus member, you get it for cheap for the digital version than you can for PlayStation Now. So it's just like, really? Like, I'm not about to pay $7 to play 2 hours of a game. That's not a rental to me. That's just God guarding me or taking my money. Bad Sony. Bad. Get rid of PlayStation Now. Oh, and get, oh, you already got rid of PlayStation Home. That's why we did not mention PlayStation Home. That was a disaster. I deleted that mug real quick. Just be like, never again, Sony. Don't ever do this craziness. So that's the end of the show. Johnny, plug, what are you up to? What's going on with you guys?
Yeah, so I obviously I'm part of the Happy Hour with Johnny and Deuce, where twice weekly podcast dropping on Tuesdays and Fridays for your listening pleasure. And you can follow us at HH Podcast Show on Twitter, facebook.com/ Happy Hour Podcast Show. You can email us hhpodcastshow@gmail.com. We're kind of random. We talk about anything from video games to television to movies to pro wrestling, comic books. Like, we're like a melange of media, cornucopia of content, whatever. Like, we're all over the spectrum. So if 1 week it's not your bag, maybe check the next week. You might find something you like. So it's just, it's two guys, kind of what we're doing. It's just two guys just chatting about stuff we love. It's you know,
and
it's fun.
And last month they did the 20th anniversary of the PlayStation. So congratulations once again, Sony, to that. You guys could go back and listen to that. I keep saying it in my podcast. Like them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter. These guys are amazing when it comes to podcasts. They do such a good job. I'm behind a few episodes because there's so many podcasts that I'm trying to catch up on, but I have been listening to them and they're so good. They did an interview, a 3-part interview, and I cannot think of its name. I know you guys did a 3-part interview and it was really good. I gotta catch up on the last part of it, but you guys are just amazing. Like I said, once again, follow them on Twitter. Listen to their podcast. Listen to Johnny and Duke and Kyle. Just talk, like, they talk. They know their stuff. They really know their stuff. Thank you, Johnny, for coming on the show. You guys.
Thank you.
That's me. You could try, you guys could check more of this show. That's me again. On SoundCloud. Just go to SoundCloud, type in Optional Opinion. You guys can follow me on Twitter at ThatRetroCode. Check out more shows at TheAnomalousRadioNetwork.com. Actually, TheAnomalousRadioNetwork.podbean.com. Check out The Critical Hit Anomalous. We will be coming back soon. Hopefully, you guys check that out. Got some good shows coming on there. Like I said, follow me on Twitter. You can email this show at myop2comment@yahoo.com. That's MYOP, the number 2, COMMENT at yahoo.com. Thank you guys for joining us. Have a great weekend. Go play some games on your Sony platforms. If you don't own any of the games that we did recommend or that you checked in the blog, pick them up. You know, you can get a PlayStation 2 kind of for cheap, like around $250. So it has a great library of games that you could choose from. Johnny, any last words? Anything you want to say before we go?
Metal Gear Solid is amazing. You need to play it.
Metal Gear Solid is amazing. You need to play it. Before we leave, I'm going to play this Melody of Life from Final Fantasy IX, one of my favorite games. Thank you guys for joining us. Enjoy family, friends. Get you some good eats. If you're working, work hard. Go make that money. And we are out. Peace.
traces of the love you left inside my lonely heart. To weave by picking up the pieces that remain, melodies of life, love's lost refrain. Stories, yeah.